All right, can I have everyone's attention? We will get our meeting underway. I am Mary Beth Randall, president of Guide Dog User to California. We're probably going to be a little bit smaller group, certainly. We've had a lot of illness and health issues and whatnot with board members, but we at least have some of us here. And the girl restaurant. I know about that. Okay, I'm going to let our vice president get himself set up and whatnot, and while he's doing that, we will go around and introduce ourselves, and if you'd like, you can give the name of your dog, and then hopefully we'll have, of course, as I said, my name is Mary Beth Randall, and I am president, and my guide's name is Tennyson, and I'll be the happy camper to walk around the room because I'm so tired of sitting in chairs. Oh, absolutely. Definitely tell us about your dog. Tennyson, I'm sorry. It's one of those things. It's still early morning somehow in my head. Tennyson is a male yellow lab, and he's 4 years old, and he's also my third guide from GDB. And he came from the San Rafael campus. And so I claim him as my big goofball. So there we go. So I will wander around for nothing better to do. Yes, Jerry. Oh, okay. Okay. I guess we'll pause. We'll just go on around and let people introduce themselves. And maybe we can yabber a little longer. But, okay. What we do, we'll do. So,
there you go. I have a microphone.
Hi, I'm Lee Morton. I'm the current editor of Forward, at least. And Lee Morton. And I have Ed. And he is a male black lab from Guide Dogs for the Blind's Oregon campus. And he turned 4 on March 10th. And he is very glad to be in San Diego because he is totally and 100% irrevocably in love with water.
Oh.
And he's also a cuddle bug.
Hi, I'm Ann Kaiser, immediate past president. And I have Daytona, who's my fourth guide from GDB. She's 7.5 years old, black lab. And she's definitely well named. She's a very fast girl and has a lot of get up and go still. It's hard to, when I take her to the vet, nobody can believe she's 7.5. They know she looks like she's about 3 because she doesn't have any gray or any signs of age at all. So,
I'm Paula Barton. I have a wheelchair guide that's not with me, unfortunately. Darwin from GDB Oregon campus.
Good morning. My name is Melissa Hudson, and I have my guide, Anya. She's a female black Labrador retriever. She's 8 years old, and she is my first guide dog. Oh, guide dog for the blind, San Rafael campus.
Okay.
There we go. Big stretch.
Big stretch?
Very funny. Pleasant. Good morning. This is Mark Oswald with Little Miss Beautiful, Wendy, from Guide Dogs America, Selmar. Guide Dogs America. She is a black lab, 4 years old, and she loves to come and kiss all the other animals.
I'm Judy Wilkinson from San Leandro. I'm here with Terry, my black lab guide dog from Seeing Eye. He's 8 and doesn't look a day over 2. He weighs what he weighed when we brought him home. My husband and I, shall we say, who both like to eat and are a little chubby, designated one person in our family to stay thin, and we decided to be Terry, who is a wuss dog and hates water.
I had one of those. There you go.
I'm Frank Welty, and I am going to be going to Oregon in July to get my first dog.
Yay! Yay.
Here you go, Krista.
I'm Christy Crespin.
I have my great number 8 Princess Caroline, the Labradoodle from Guide Dogs of the Desert. And I just got her in November.
And she has a pink bow. She looks very pretty. Here we go.
Hi, I'm Maria Wong, and I don't have a guide dog, but I kind of borrow Garrett. No.
Bill Gillespie, I have my first dog, Garrett, who is 7.5, and he is a yellow Labrador from GDB. And since the last time I was there, I've joined Lions Club and Santa Rosa Host Lions, and I've just recently been elected as a director of the board.
Hello, my name is David Jackson, and I'm with my guide, Rolo, and he's my first dog, and I've had him just about 18 months. He's 3 years old. GBD. He's a yellow lab, correct.
Good morning. It's Sylvia Munoz. I have my third guide, Nina, who is a yellow lab, and she's tiny. She's 50 pounds.
Guide dogs for the blind. Guide dog.
Good morning. I'm David Hoffman from Silicon Valley, and I am without guide dog, but hope to get one soon.
I think we did everyone.
Everyone that's in here.
Yeah. We will. Our vice president has to come back. I can kind of let people know what's on the agenda, and then we will fill in Jerry as we go along. I'm not sure who besides myself got the minutes from board meetings, but we can also do that. It is good to have everybody here, and it's actually pretty nice outside. I actually went out there without my jacket. It's oh, my. Yeah. So my... it's kind of off my agenda, but I'm going to read the agenda so that the other board members have it. I did not get a chance to send that to everybody in the last couple of days here. We took care of 1 and 2. 3 is going to be reading of the minutes. 4 will be our treasurer's report. Then we will have a membership report. Then 6 is going to be fundraising. 7 is going to be forward, and we will talk about that. Then basically starting at 8 will be all new business unless somebody has any other old business that we rediscover in the minutes. We will have election of delegates for both national as well as state. We will have a discussion about picking a legislative chairperson. We don't normally, but we forgot to do it in the fall, because we normally do it in the fall. That's okay. 10, I have on here door prize chairperson to find someone that would be interested in that. And then 11 is going to be a discussion about SB 1491. And I know Frank will be most happy to get our decision about that. The board has discussed it, but I thought it would be good for the membership to hear about it and make sure that everybody's in agreement. Then 12, Jerry is going to talk about hybrid cars and some safety issues. 13, something that's come up that we're going to talk about is possibly having chat time for GDUC members via conference call, where our state members can kind of get to know each other a little better, since we're always only getting maybe a few members at one convention or another, so it would be great for us to do that. And then, oh, any other business, 14, and 15 will be adjournment. So we do have a very full agenda, and we will then get to the minutes. All right. This will be interesting. I haven't done this before. Actually, all I have is my computer. I don't have a Braille display or any of that on me. So these first minutes are going to be from January the 21st, and we could just tried utilizing the speech on my computer because my reading would go way too slow, and see if this works for everybody.
The meeting of the GDUC board was called to order at 7:17 p.m. by the new president.
8 o'clock, mate. The time is 9 a.m.
Mary Beth Randall.
Sorry about my call.
Those present included Mary Beth Randall, Ankiza, Ken Metz, and Debbie Flowers. Mary Beth gave the treasurer's report showing $2,944.79 as the previous balance with $814 deposited. The current balance was $3,758.79. Other bills for the puppy raisers doing clean up at the fall 2009 convention and 2010 dues to Jane Sheehan of GDUI plus other necessary payouts will be made. Ken will work with the old rosters to attempt to increase membership. The treasurer's report was accepted. Old business. Convention wrap-up. We received a lot of good compliments. We still have shirts left. The mugs and books are all gone. Three wall hangings remaining. Mary Beth will pay the balance to Jerry Wilson in San Diego for remaining wall hangings. New business. We next discussed the convention for the spring 2010 at the San Francisco Crown Plaza Hotel and Burlingame. We will work on getting two puppy raiser groups up there to assist with cleanup. We will look into the possibility of having a walkathon to get some PR for GDUC. We will need help with getting some help in setting up a route. This would occur on a Thursday. Debbie spoke about how to protect your dogs when traveling in such vehicles, paratransit as being in vans. Our morning program will include a panel discussion on traveling safely as well as using safety tips while traveling with our guide dogs. We agreed to ask Tony to work on the sunset of the guide dog board for 2011. We felt that we needed to look at the pros and cons of whether we should continue to back the California State Board of Guide Dogs for the Blind. We're going to look at dog beds as a new fundraising project. Ken will look into this possibility. Our next meeting is scheduled for another telephone board meeting on March 4th, 2010, at 7 p.m. We adjourned at 8:25. Respectfully submitted, Ken Metz for Pamela Hill Metz, who was getting her new guide dog at GDA. End of document. Page 1, end of line.
Okay, yes, Pam in January was getting her new dog, and they're at Guide Dogs of America. So those were the minutes from the January meeting. Is there any corrections to the minutes? Then is there a motion to accept it, or do we want to put them all together? All right, second. All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any of you against? Abstentions? Yes, Jerry. I have the January 21st minutes, and I realized that what I don't have is minutes from our last board meeting in October. March, we didn't have one. We had it in April. Yeah.
Agenda for GD. Agenda 04-06-10 Doug Board Meeting Doc.
Yeah, I had such a, you know, it's always an adjustment. And I don't know about this, the adjustment of being full-time working and just keeping up with everything else sometimes doesn't always happen. So the next minutes we have are for April the 6th, 2010.
04-06-10, Doug Board Meeting, Doc Marcus, page 1. April 6th, 2010. The meeting was called to order by President Mary Beth Randall at 7:15 p.m. There were no minutes or treasurer's reports prepared for this meeting. No minutes or treasurer's reports prepared for this meeting. The minutes will be ready for the GDUC Spring 2010 membership meeting at the San Francisco Crown Plaza Hotel in Burlingame, California. The treasurer's report will be close to the amount, but will be balanced as soon as the new treasurer, Ken Metz, and the former treasurer, Mary Beth Randall, can get to their respective Wells Fargo banks to make the transition. There will be approximately $3,350 as a balance at this convention. Mary Beth is working on obtaining three puppy raising clubs in the San Francisco Bay area to assist with cleanup, and she will also get petted cash out of the bank for the shirts we will be selling at the exhibit table. We will try to have a dog bed sample for fundraising at the convention, but it may not occur until the fall 2010 membership meeting. We will also continue by having another 50-50 raffle, which will be called at the CCB convention banquet. One of the State Board of Guide Dogs for the Blind members will be attending the meeting and will hopefully speak for a short time about why the board should remain an important board in California. Eric will also discuss AB 1491, new legislation pertaining to home training. There is some controversy here due to the State Board wanting guide dog schools to be licensed in California if they want to do home training in this state. question remains as to whether or not schools outside of California will be required to have California licensed trainers, just for the purpose of maintaining a handler's work-off. Excellence with his or her guide dog. The meeting was adjourned at 8:25 p.m. Respectfully submitted.
All right. Sorry about that. So those are the minutes. Is there any corrections or changes to the minutes from April 6th? Then is there a motion to approve minutes? Okay. Second? All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Anybody against? Abstentions? Okay. Then the minutes are taken care of. I don't have any minutes for the fall convention board meeting that we had, so we're going to have to possibly maybe wait till the fall of this year to read them, or we could also put those in forward as well and then read them in forward and then also vote on them at the convention in the fall. So we can plan for that. All right, three is going to be, we read three. Four is our treasurer's report, and I will just let everybody know that Ken Metz had to have heart surgery, and he is now at home. He's been at home for a while now, but he's still recuperating, and so it really wasn't a good idea for him to travel, so I am giving a report for him. Our balance at the end of last convention was $3,944.79. Since then, between then and that convention and this convention, we have deposited $974, and that those deposits consist of membership dues and sales from T-shirts at the last convention and the last of the mugs that we sold and whatnot at that last convention. Our expenses for that same time period was $643. So this is good. At least we didn't spend more. And, of course, a lot of that is dues that we owe to GDY every year, our affiliate dues to CCB, and there were a couple of expenses from that were voted and approved on last convention for giving a donation to the puppy clubs in Fresno. And I think that's all the things that I can remember as far as the expenses go. And so now our current balance is $3,275.79. Are there any questions about the treasurer's report and the ending balance? The ending balance is $3,275.79. Any other questions? Then is there a motion to approve the minutes? I mean, treasurer's report.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Anybody against? Abstentions? All right. Next will be membership. And Pat LaFrance-Wolf is our membership person presently. She's not here, so I think the main thing I will say, and I'll see if any board members want to add to it, is that if you haven't paid your dues, please do so. And there is somebody at the booth today that can help fill out that kind of information. Yes? There's a list of people who are currently members. The question is just when she paid her dues. I've never been good at actually writing down the date the person paid their dues. But yeah, and I suppose that is a good thing to add, and I will, let's make a note of that, definitely.
I know you're on my list to receive forward on the people who've paid thus far, so you must have paid that you paid in the convention last year or something. If you're on, I know I've checked.
Okay. I'd say that at this point you can safely say you're a member. Because if Lee's got your information, because the one thing I have been doing is sending an updated list to Lee and Pat and Ken as we've been going through all of this transition.
Here, Lee, you want the mic?
Okay. Forward just went out. it's pretty much not just an email publication. So it just went out the day before the convention, so you might find it on your inbox. Three. It used to go out four, but before the last convention. Around October. It's published three times a year. Basically, okay, the deadline for publications are March 1st, so that one gets done and put out usually around April. And then we usually try to sneak one in June, July, kind of for the summer issue. We do one, September 1st is the next deadline, and that one tries to get out in October. And right, you know, to get ready for this convention. We used to have a December one, but that one never, I think about a year ago, we decided to cancel that one because of the Christmas holidays. It was almost never got any submissions. So, you know, why beat a dead horse? It's obvious nobody wanted to put anything in for December. So that is when it is. It's basically the publication dates are March, June, and September, so then we try to get them out that next month after their April, July, and October. Couldn't come up with October. So that's how it works. And also, that's another thing, too, I may as well go on and bring up. We're pretty liberal in what we'll take. Of course, any kind of subject storyline about or opinion about legislation, anything, if you've got something going on in your area that relates to guide dog users, that we are very interested in that. Please send it to me. But I'll even take fiction. It has to be guide dog related. And, or I will even take, like, if you just want to write a little story or a poem about your dogs, we will take that. But send it to, I have two email addresses, a work one and a home one. I'll take either one. Lee, L-E-E, at bccsd.org. That's the acronyms for Blind Community Center of San Diego. So, Lee, L-E-E, at B as in baby, C as in cat, and C as in cat, S-D, S as in Sam, D as in David, .org. Or if you want to use the home email, it's Glek, G-L-E-K, 99 at earthlink.net. So either one of those will work. So send me things and I will get them in for the summer forward.
Yep. All right. Excuse me. Is there any questions or discussion? Yeah, definitely, as Lee said, we would love to get people, you know, more involved in submitting things for forward. Our biggest issue over the years is that even though there was a time when we offered more, the cost, you know, it got to be pretty expensive for getting cassettes and things. And now, with cassettes going out of date, if we're going to provide another format, we need to really figure out what we're doing and all of that. So that's why, unfortunately, at this point, email is the only format. And so it is something that we're going to have to probably think about to see what kind of things the membership would like as far as formats, because of all the changes that we're going through now with technology and everything. So anyway, if there's no more discussion, all right, so then is there a motion to approve the membership? Yes, membership. I guess it doesn't matter. Yeah, you're probably right. Okay. Then next we will go to fundraising. I actually skipped fundraising technically by accident. So we will go back to fundraising. As you read in the minutes, we're going to try and have dog beds, hopefully, at the fall convention. And the dog beds are described to be pretty nice, and also the nice thing that's good about them is that you can wash them in a washing machine, and then all you need to do is hang them up, and they dry really fast, apparently. And apparently they're also very cushy, so we're hoping that we will have something that we can have at our booth in the fall for guide dog users to check out. And if we like it well enough, then we will look at having that be a fundraising item, probably starting in 2011 if all works out okay. At our booth today, we still have T-shirts. What I know we have currently are smalls, extra larges. We have a couple of 2Xs, and I think there's 1 or 2 3Xs. Oh, 1. Well, okay. We're getting down, so that's good. And we still have 3 wall hangings, and I have not quite connected with Jerry from the San Diego chapter, but I will continue to make effort to get a hold of him, and that way I can make sure I have his proper mailing address and all that stuff. And are there any... I'll open it up for any other discussion, because if there was any other ideas, we would love to hear it.
I have a question.
Yes.
How much dog beds would be?
The question is how much dog beds would be.
You can pass a map.
Sure.
How much would it be? Dog bed.
At this point, we had not made a discussion on how much the beds would be, but I do believe the vague cost for the actual beds was between $20 and $30, I believe. And so we would need to, maybe it was a little less, I'm not sure now. But that is something that we will have to discuss, and then we'll get that kind of information to the membership. You betcha. I know my retired guide would like that. Describing the bed, from what I understand, is... Oh, the T-shirts. I'm sorry. The T-shirts are white T-shirts. They have a pocket on the front breast area, and just above the pocket is our GDUC logo of a paw print with GDUC on the head part of the paw. And on the back of the shirt, it says, "In Dog We Trust." And underneath that has Guide Dog Users of California. And the lettering is all in a navy blue. And I'll tell you what, man, they've been a great shirt. So if you don't have one, go and get one. They're $10. And, oh, and also at the booth, you can get 50-50 raffle tickets. They're $1 each, or 6 tickets for $5. And so go do our table some business. And that way we can have a nice, good pot for giving 50-50 away tonight at the banquet. No. Have no idea how much we've sold so far.
Anyway, today's my dog's birthday. That's what I want to bring out there. Okay. Oh, yeah. Do you have any more mediums of the guide dog shirts?
No. All gone.
So what's the large
Yeah. They're smalls, extra large, and I heard you say a 3X, 1 3X?
Yeah, and there's 2X. A couple of 2Xs as well. Probably if you wanted a medium, I would just get an extra large wash it in hot water. Definitely, yeah. Anything else about fundraising? Any ideas or suggestions that the board can look at for bringing to the membership?
I have a suggestion.
Oops.
Oh. Magic Mike, thank you. This is Christy. You know the bowls that they sell at GDB that are the little snap? They roll up and they snap.
Yeah,
I don't know where they get them, but they are the best bowl. And I don't even snap mine anymore. You know, the snap breaks or whatever. I just fold it up in fourths and put it in her little pouch. The other thing is those little blue pouches, wherever you found those, I'm ready for a new one. So I think, you know, those kinds of things are really good. And people always go, "What's in there?"
Did you want to talk?
No.
Well, those are great ideas, definitely. And actually, I know that currently GDUI still has pouches. And even with the changes that GDUI was making to their to their store and all of that. They do still have some of the pouches. But, yeah, that's definitely a good idea that we could look at for California.
Madam President.
Go ahead.
This is Judy Wilkinson. I really second Christy's notion, but I would want definitely, I've been looking for little packs of little bowls that are disposable because I don't like the canvas ones. I don't know what these are like that you described, Christy, but I would be all for some kind of little portable bowl that would dry quickly.
Let me show you. Does anybody have the real one that rolls up? I do. Yeah, that's a good one. Okay, and yeah, that's a good, you know, it's funny. I have a bunch of those canvas things and I hate them. I would gladly give them to anybody who wanted them at this rate. So I'll have to bring, actually, I think I have one in my suitcase. I'll have to dig it out. But anyway, any other ideas that someone would like to bring up?
I don't know if this is appropriate. I think a few people walked in recently. I don't know if they want to introduce themselves.
This is Brian Francis from Guide Dogs. Good morning, everybody.
Yes, Brian. Hey.
Hi, Brian. This is Dan Kaiser from Sacramento and my dog, Reese's.
Yay. So where you got it, when you got it.
I got him from the... Oh, jeez, I didn't... that scared me. I got him from the SPCA. I got him from Seeing Eye in January, and he's 2 years old. He's a chocolate lab named Reese's.
Yay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Eric Holm. I'm with the State Board of Guide Dogs for the Blind. I'm here with my guide, Ford. Ford and I have been together since December of 2006, and we graduated from the San Rafael campus.
Good morning, everybody. This is Anna Fonseca with Norman. And Thursday, when we came here, it was a fourth anniversary year that him and I were together, and that's a high water mark for me. You know, my other dog I had to give up after 2.5 years of service. Well, this guy I have 4 years. That was Thursday. And today is Norman's birthday.
Yay.
So if someone be nice enough, the kitchen staff make a cake.
What school is he from?
San Rafael.
Okay.
San Rafael for the blind.
Oh wait, is he Norbert and Nestle's is he Norbert's brother and Nestle?
Yes, that's it.
Wow, because Ed, okay, Norbert is Ed's father, guys, and so this
what?
So Norman must be Ed's uncle.
That's it. Guy B, I don't know.
I'll tell you what, it's amazing how all of our dogs are somehow related.
Yeah,
all right, is that everybody that's come into the room since earlier?
Yes.
Okay.
It's my birthday, too, today.
Oh, well, happy birthday to Lee.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very nice.
Yeah, we a lot of people.
My goodness, it is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. Then we will go on to some old business since there was one item, and I'll just explain the idea of having a possible walkathon wasn't going to really work for this convention, but I'd still really like to see that work, and I'm hoping that maybe Lee could help us with the area down there, and maybe we could look at doing something like that in the fall, because it would certainly be great if we could do something that would get us out of the hotel a little bit and just go for a short walk even, and maybe try to, you know, get some media attention for guide dogs and educating the public a little bit and that kind of thing. So that would be a great idea that I would like to see us follow up on. Then we will go into new business. I have election of delegates for national and state. We're going to start with state, and we don't normally do this at the spring convention. We just, with everything on the agenda last in Fresno, it got sort of forgotten about by accident. And so I'm going to ask if there are any nominations from the floor for delegate to the state.
Madam Chairman, would the state person would do this, that their term would start for the next fall convention, right?
Actually, the way it's set up right now is the question is about when the term will start. They would be for spring of 2011, and currently the way it's set up through DDUC, we have a delegate and alternate delegate that serve for 2-year terms. And so we have a delegate and an alternate delegate for our convention here and then for the fall. And then the next new people would start at spring 2011. then it would also serve for 2012. That's correct.
Mary Deb, Madam President?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, if those are, whoa, this thing is really hot. If these were 2-year terms, then it seems to me, I remember that we had delegates voted in fall of 2008.
Oh.
So then we wouldn't be doing it again till this next fall. So if I was thinking if those were 1-year terms, then yeah, that's true. So actually, we don't need to do delegates for state till this next convention in the fall. There you go.
You always do it in the fall?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, for state, we usually always have that at the fall convention, and for national, we do it in the spring.
And then we find out who's going to be going to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Does the affiliate sponsor delegate? Does the delegate pay his or her own way? What's the deal?
For the state, we do not offer any stipend or anything like that to our conventions. And in case you're not familiar, you're probably familiar from your own local chapters. The delegates would basically be responsible for things like going to credentials and going to the general sessions to vote. And we would ask for you to write something up. It doesn't have to be 10 pages, just something for us to put in forward after each convention. And that's pretty much it for the state stuff. And I can go into national. National, we have done a stipend, and that has varied from year to year. And those individuals are responsible for going to the what they call the GDUY Roundup, which is usually on a Sunday, to check our affiliate in for GDUY. And you would get the number of people in our affiliate and votes that we would have. And you would then be responsible for any voting and attending as many sessions as you can. And again, writing something up to put in forward after convention. And that's pretty much the scoop.
After the dog house with DC?
After the what?
And as you did, for the dog house called DC.
Yes, yeah.
The president does the dog house.
No, the president does.
Yeah,
because
I'm going to DC.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep.
Anybody can do it.
Yeah, anybody can submit something. Dog.
Yeah. Oh, you're the editor now.
Oh, is she? Okay. We don't. We're not going to go there.
Yeah, really. So that's just a general rundown of responsibilities for delegates and alternate delegates. And when I filled out our credentials, I actually could not find any of my notes about who our delegates and alternate delegates. All I could remember was Ann. And so France Wolf is our alternate. Okay. She's not technically listed for this convention, but I'll make sure that we get that properly taken care of for the fall. So then we don't have to do elections for state, but we do have to have elections for those for the national convention. And if we could kind of get an idea of who might be going to Phoenix. I know I am. Anyone else?
I am. I'm trying to.
That's Dan.
Dan Kaiser's going.
Dan Kaiser.
Okay. Who else?
Christy Preston.
Christy Preston.
Okay.
Preston's.
No. We know Chris.
We know Chris.
Christy. Yes.
It's Christy.
All right. Anybody else? Okay. Then I'll open up to the floor. Are there any nominations? And try and get a mic for anybody who has a nomination.
I nominate Dan Kaiser.
I nominate Reese's.
Yeah, I think Reese's should just go. And
No, I was going to nominate Dan Kaiser, but since the other lady already did it.
All right. Are there any other we have not Dan Kaiser as a nomination. Are there any other nominations? Are there any other nominations? And are there any other nominations?
Move the nominations to be closed.
Second.
All right. And Dan, by acclamation, you are
Bravo.
Going to be our delegate to GDUY.
We have work to do,
yeah. And you go to good work so that some of us maybe can just enjoy the events. That would be fun, too.
And spread the aroma of chocolate.
Yes, that's right. All right, we'll open to the floor. Are there any nominations for alternate delegate to GDY?
I'd like to nominate Mary Beth Randall.
Okay, the name of Mary Beth Randall has been submitted. Are there any other nominations?
You have to get off the vote. You have to have somebody else conduct the unless you're going to be win by acclamation.
Are there any other nominations?
It's going to be my acclamation.
Are there any other nominations?
Okay.
I guess I'm by acclamation going. I will then also now open up to discussion for the board and membership as to what the people feel we should give as a stipend for our delegate and alternate delegate. Who would like to speak up? The rooms are $89 a night and plus tax. And I know for people, they also, of course, have to pay for flying there as well as whatnot. Now, in past years, we have done as little as $400 per person. It might have been less in some time before myself. But we have also done as much as $500. And I will certainly understand what people feel as far as making sure we don't deplete our budget too much. But those are the basic numbers that I can give out as far as what we have done in past years.
Yes, Chair.
Here, we can give him a mic.
I move that we allocate $500 per person.
Second.
Okay, Jerry Arakawa makes a motion to give each of the individuals $500 and seconded by Ann. Is there any discussion?
Hi, this is Frank. And I'm new here, so I don't know the history of our previous practice in terms of
I'm not familiar with the history of our previous practice as far as stipend goes. So, but it does seem to me that if the range is 400 to 500, given that we're talking about Phoenix, it would seem to make sense that we would be in the lower end of the range. That would be my thought.
Mm-hmm.
And that's certainly true.
So my car is still
expensive. Sure.
I think personally, having done this job, okay, because back in the very, 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 very old days, GDUI only met one or two days, but now they pretty much had something twice a day. So it's like Sunday you go to the roundup and you've got to go. Usually you have their long sessions on Monday, and then they usually had some sort of a Monday evening activity. And you also probably want to go to some of the functions that the schools have, like GDB usually has a breakfast. Guiding Eyes usually has a cocktail party. I think Seeing Eye has a, if you could get into some of those. So it's a lot of PR things. It's a lot of extracurricular activities that the person has to go to with this one. I really think 500 is more realistic, and it's, yeah, they are still, mm-hmm. 500 sure helps. And then, of course, they have to come. And you've got some controls on it, guys, because they have to come and write up something for forward when they get back. Okay. So,
push it at BC.
Yes. So I really think leave it at 500.
We've got somebody over here.
Okay, go ahead. More discussion?
Yes.
Just a quick note. Although, you know, Frank, I think, has a good point. I suggested 500 because, you know, everybody is struggling right now, and it's if we want to provide the kind of quality involvement and reporting that we really would like from these delegates, I think it's going to cost a lot of money. Whatever we can, whatever cost we can defray, I think it's important for the organization to support the delegates and alternate.
All right, there's a call for the question. Then I will ask if are all those in favor of the motion to approve $500?
Aye.
Any noes? Abstentions? Okay. Well, thank you very much. And, you know, I'm in a weird place, so I do very crazy, weird things. And I hope that I can continue to do those weird, crazy things for as long as possible, as long as I live in the middle of the state. I have literally gone to Oakland to fly out to national conventions because the cost is so much cheaper to come out of the Bay Area. So anyway, I look forward to going. I enjoy the conventions, and I would encourage everybody. I know that GDY will have a convention CD that'll come out, and for you to listen to those and check it out and see what kinds of activities are going to happen and just appreciate what we have in that. Oh, we have a new person. Would you like to introduce yourself? We'll get a mic to you. And if you can, if you have a dog with you, tell us about your dog, their name, and where they came from, and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm Vivian Younger, and I'm from the Silicon Valley chapter. And I do have a black lab, and her name is Hawaii.
Ah,
and
yes.
I'm from Guide Dogs.
Yeah, I remember you. Yes. Okay. Hi. Well, glad to have you here.
We came in together.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Who's helping us?
That's still a number for us.
Mm-hmm. Who's our sister?
Hey, I was. Pardon?
Who are you?
Oh, my name is Sandy. I'm a guide dog puppy raiser.
Yes.
I have my first pup just graduated. She's down in Santa Cruz working. Her name is Amity, black lab. And I have little Alexis now. She's 6 months old, and she's going to be a guide dog, too.
Yay. All right. Yes, yes. Just as a side note, I think we ended up with about 4 clubs. And yesterday we had about 3 individuals only, but I'll tell you what, even those 3 people, they did a good job yesterday, and we definitely appreciate these puppy raisers to no end. So.
Do we somehow send a banking letter to the club? We need to do something.
Actually, I have a section for any other business, and so we can definitely do that. We will move on with my agenda here. We have next, I would like for us to talk about assigning someone as a legislative chairperson. It is something that's important for all of the chapters and affiliates, and it's not something that we've had somebody assigned to in past years, or we've just sort of basically taken turns doing whatever, and we've just sort of made it a combined thing. But it would be good if we had someone that was dedicated to that. And so I would like for, you know, anybody that was willing to either volunteer or get people that are interested in that kind of thing just to speak up so we can have somebody that's dedicated to that.
Can you explain what the goal would be, what you're looking for?
Yeah. Frank actually could probably explain this a little better, but just what I understand about legislative person is that if that person would be willing to pay attention to legislative things that come from the CCB and anything that would pertain especially to guide dog users, but also to the CCP, they would let us as a board know about those things, and we would also want that for that person to maybe be willing to put something together that we can have in a foreword so that we can have our membership educated on what's going on in legislation. And there is a governmental affairs committee that meets here at conventions, and so if that person could go to the committee meetings, that would be excellent, so that they can
I would also add to that that what will happen is that as soon as I find out who that individual is, that I will add them to a list of legislative chairs so that whenever I issue legislative reports, you'll automatically get those without having to call the CCB office to hear them. I also send special notices to legislative chairs that I might not send to the general membership. You'll get that. One other thing that would be helpful would be that since the Guide Dog Board has meetings from time to time that are usually available by teleconference, it would behoove GDUC to have that person possibly be in the habit of as much as possible participating in those in those meetings by conference call. Like in the next, I have to look at my calendar, but coming up very soon, like in the next week or two, the Guide Dog Board is going to be having their legislative committee meeting, and it would be good I think that you've already arranged for somebody to be on that call. I'm going to be on that call. But it, that's something that it would be good for the legislative chair to be doing moving forward.
Another thing a legislative chair should be in, having done this, we have to also be willing to write letters and call legislators, much more proactive than just, you know, a good legislative chair will be willing to help with that. Get the, you know, let the members know when letters need to be written. Maybe have a phone tree to get the members to know when calls need to be made to their legislators, their assemblymen, and their senators. So that would also be part of what you'd want a chair to do. And I'd be willing to do it.
All right. Is that you? That's Christy?
It's Dan.
Dan.
Oh, that was Judy.
Oh, that was Judy. I'm sorry, Judy.
Madam Chair, I move that we appoint Judy as the chair of the legislative chair.
Second.
Judy, yes. All right. Is there, well, I guess we don't have to treat it like regular elections. All right. Is there anybody else, though, that would like to be nominated? Oh, okay.
I'd be willing to be involved in the committee. I wouldn't want to chair it.
All right. Lee is willing to assist Judy. Who was that?
Dan.
Okay.
Three
is probably enough. So,
oh, yeah, you can't beat those two.
Yeah, exactly. All right, then. All those in favor of approving Judy Wilkinson as our legislative chairperson?
Aye.
Anybody against? Abstentions? Okay. Thank you so much, Judy, that you're willing to do that. Well, it'll be a good thing for us to have you there to represent us. And then Dan and Lee will help assist you, Judy. So I will make sure that I get all of your... We will make sure we get your information, Judy. Actually, if you could stop by the booth, that would be a good thing. Another thing that's come up in the last board meeting is that we ought to have somebody dedicated to getting door prizes for our GDUC. Normally, it's been just the job of the president, and, you know, it's we would really like to get the membership to be involved. And so it would not have to be someone who's a board member. As long as you're a member of GDUC, I think that would be a good requirement. And what we can do is make sure that you have, like, the names of and telephone numbers of the guide dog schools, and just use your noggin brain to come up with ideas on things to get for door prizes at our convention. And so is there anyone that would like to take on this job? And or would somebody like to nominate somebody that wants to do it?
This is Paula Barton. I will be willing to do that.
All right. Very cool. Yeah. And Paula's a go-getter kind of person out there. So she will certainly work hard at it. Is there anybody that might want to help Paula out, where you guys could communicate by phone or email and all that?
I'll help her.
Okay.
It's Ann.
Ann? All right. That would be good. Okay. Well, I appreciate that. Yes, getting people involved is a very happy thing. All right, and the next thing is the discussion on SB 1491, and this is the bill that's being brought forth upcoming about where one of the items is the changes to the law on how home training is done here in the state of California. And we had a little bit of a discussion about it last night at the general session, and the board at our last meeting discussed it. And at the moment, the board is, you know, in favor of it, but I wanted to bring it to the membership and see what other feelings might be out there that people might have concerns about. Because if there are concerns, we want to make sure that A, Judy and Frank know about these things from GDUC so that we can express those concerns with this bill.
This is Frank.
Yeah.
And let me be very that the SB 1491 is it's kind of an interesting bill in that it's kind of a catch-all bill. It's from the Committee on Business Professions and Economic Development, and it's kind of a catch-all. It's like they've got a number of boards under the California Department of Consumer Affairs. Like, so there's a piece of the bill that deals with some details of the accountancy board. There's one that has to do with the cosmetology board, some regulations there. And then there's one regulation in there for the guide dog board. So I want to bring that up because this is very narrow focused. So if you have issues with out-of-state guide dog schools, if you have issues with whether there should be a board or not, yada, yada, none of that applies. There's just one thing that's going on here. Currently, as things stand right now, according to the law, in order to receive home training, first off, the individual must have previously been through a residential guide dog program, and the home training must be because of hardship. In other words, as it stands now, according to state law, you should only be receiving home training if you've been through guide dog schools in the past, but for some good reason, you can't go back to guide dog school. You have to get the training at home because the school wouldn't work. And it, of course, has to be with a licensed instructor. What changes is that you'd still need to get your training from a licensed instructor or a licensed school, but there wouldn't have to be any special circumstances for getting the training, and you wouldn't have to have previously been to a guide dog school. In other words, a new guide dog user would be able to get home training, which means that the schools could offer home training for all guide dog users, whether they're new or experienced, and without any special circumstances to justify it. The other thing that the bill does is it does require the schools to submit the names and addresses of those who receive guide dog training to the state, which I understand they have to do already anyway, so that isn't actually anything new. And that's what the bill does. SB 1491. It's the committee, so it's under Negrete McCloud is the author, but it's basically because she's the chair of the committee, so it's coming out of the committee. If there's a question, go ahead.
Please.
I'll just repeat the question.
Yeah, I have a question. What about, I've been wanting a German Shepherd since way back in 03, mm-hmm. and Santa Fe has phased them out. My dog, Norman, are you saying that can any guide dog, like if I want a German Shepherd like from New Jersey, and I can't go there because, economy or budget on my part, are you saying that New Jersey can come out here and train me?
Well, here's the way that works, and I think there's been some confusion on this point, is that it is legal for guide dog schools out of state to do training in California, but just like for California guide dog schools, their trainers have to be licensed here in California. In other words, and I have to tell you up front my personal bias on that, is, and I'll be really clear about this, is that I don't have a problem with that because when I hear some of these other schools from out of state whining about having to get their instructors certified, a license, to get a license here in California, you have to show that you're an experienced guide dog trainer, which you would expect. They have to take a test, which you would expect, and they have to pay a whole $100. Excuse me, but if you're flying an instructor out from New Jersey anyway, with paying for his plane flight and expenses, $100 is chump change, folks. Yeah. Well, Dan, I suspect that I'm not sure that I would agree with you on that, but
Judy Wilkinson, I have a concern about this expanded regulation. I'm a teacher. And I've got my first dog, and I cannot tell you the value of the residential experience. And I'm not sure how we should open the floodgates here. Also, though, many schools may decide there may be schools that decide not to do this. There are schools who may say, in fact, we too think residential requirement is a good thing. I know some of the schools now, like the seeing eye where I got my dog, requires that you do at least the first week in residence, and they often will send a trainer home. If somebody's employed, they understand that there's a need to train the person at home, but you still must do some of it. And the law would not say anything about that. The schools can still decide to do what they want? Okay.
This does not require home training.
I talked to the committee consultant, and I identified myself as a Guide Dog User of California member. And all the bill does is it basically accepts home training for what it is, and it gets rid of a lot of the reporting requirements that the schools have to give on each student, like Frank said, you have to justify. But it basically accepts home training as part of guide dog training, and it gives the schools a lot more flexibility. And I know Guide Dogs for the Blind, was griping about this law, and this is a bill that I think that Guide Dogs for the Blind, Inc. and other schools in California would probably really like. Am I correct on that, Brian?
I think so.
Yeah, thank you. He said I think so. It's not that big of a bill. It doesn't open a floodgate to the point that I made about ADA, because unfortunately that can happen anyway. So, I mean, people can come in and self-train their own dogs right now in California and in the United States, because the ADA doesn't allows you to. So this just gives the schools a little bit more flexibility, and, I'm really all for that.
All right. I was actually going to say the same thing, so thank you, Lee.
I was just going to officially move that we support that GDUC support 1491.
And I second.
All right. Then all those in favor?
Aye.
Anybody against? Abstentions? Okay. And so that's, there you go, Frank. That's our official stance. I'm going to forego the one item and let Jerry have his portion. He wanted to discuss an issue about safety. He had a scary situation take place and felt like it would be a good thing for the membership to be told about and for us to look at as an issue to be talked about, possibly at the fall convention for our meeting there.
Okay, thank you, Mayor Beth. And it's kind of interesting that this came up, because we're going to be talking about car safety. In Los Angeles County, our paratransit service is called Access Services, and the providers, of which there are four scattered throughout the county, often contract with taxi companies to provide any overflow. And in Los Angeles, there are literally hundreds of thousands of riders probably by now. It's a very, very large program in LA. In any case, many of the cab companies, as you may know if you've used private taxis, are using hybrid vehicles. And in fact, some cab companies are mandating that if you want to be an independent cab driver with the company, that you have to buy hybrids. In any case, there are more and more hybrids on the road now for Access Services. And I had an incident 3 weeks ago or so with a driver. And I want to say at the outset, I really didn't blame the driver about this potentially very serious problem. But he was a driver with very, very poor English. Extremely poor. Many are, don't have a lot of English skill. This driver, he was nice enough, and he was certainly solicitous, but clearly not really familiar with English. Well, we had a very long trip. I didn't get a chance to introduce myself, but my guide dog is Tova. She's from the Boring campus. And the driver, after a long hour and a half ride, pulled into my work parking lot and said, "Okay." So when he said okay, I assumed that the car had stopped. So I opened the door. The dog, having had been confined so long, just hopped out of the car. Suddenly, I feel this pull on my shoulder, and the dog is being dragged on the asphalt. I could hear her nails going, on the sidewalk. So I yelled at him and said, "Stop!" The dog is outside. In fact, someone on the outside of the vehicle also notices, and she started yelling at the driver. He looked in the rear view and saw that there was the dog was hanging out of the vehicle, and he stopped immediately, and he was very, very apologetic. The whole incident probably lasted about 3 seconds, and luckily, the car was going slowly, but obviously fast enough that the dog couldn't keep up with didn't expect that she was going to be dragged. So my point in bringing all this up, excuse me, for those of you who are riding cabs or in as a passenger in a hybrid vehicle, you know, not only is it dangerous because one can't hear it, the vehicle, but I discovered that if they're coming to a rolling stop, you really can't feel any sense of motion at all. You know, if you're in a conventional gas-powered vehicle, even if the car is on a slow roll or an idle, you can hear the engine either slowing down or revving up or what have you. With a hybrid, there's absolutely no sense of motion. You know how an elevator, if you're going up after that initial momentum, you don't feel any motion. Well, it's the same thing with a hybrid, except there's no vibration at all. So I would suggest to everyone, if you want to avoid this, before you have the dog get out of the vehicle, make sure either have the taxi driver get out of the vehicle or ask specifically if he or she has come to a stop. I was very surprised. You know, I've ridden in hybrids before, but I did not realize how dangerous they were, in that you have no sense at all of motion or sound. Okay? And I was particularly concerned because, you know, the dog, you know, was outside of the vehicle, of course, but it wouldn't have taken much for her to be pulled down, rolled under the wheel of the vehicle, and then you have a real serious problem. And that's what I wanted to bring up. And by the way, Tova is none the worse for wear. She seems not to have been overly traumatized or anything, because she got into the next vehicle. In fact, a couple of days later, we got into another vehicle, and I was very concerned, obviously, but she didn't seem to be have changed in any way.
Yeah, very good thing. And yes, it was a scary kind of situation. So yeah, very good to bring that up to the membership, and partly because of my own memory and whatnot. Definitely at our fall convention, we're going to be talking about car safety and that sort of thing, for sure. And so I look forward to hearing what great stuff we can get about that. Two more short items. There was some possible interest in maybe if the membership might be interested in having a time where we could just get together and have a chat via conference call, and just want to do a straw poll of if people would be interested in something like this.
Yeah.
Okay, then I think this is something we will just pursue, and maybe sometime in June, May or June, probably more June, we will contact all of the membership and let them know that we're going to do this and make it available. And that way, you know, we can get some communication with our members around the state. Yes, Crispy. Let's get a mic to you if we can.
Thank you.
Do we have someone who can run a mic to her?
Yeah, I have it.
Okay.
Is there any way we can develop a GDUC listserv?
We have one.
We have a GDUC listserv?
Yes, UCL. But we need. Yeah, he's going to. That's good. Oh, wait, I'm not present. Shut up, man.
Old habits die very hard. Yes. And yes, we should definitely revitalize that. But yes, and we will get a hold of everybody as far as that goes. And that just leads me to any other business. And since Dan has something to say about the listserv, go ahead and
speak. Yeah, they're still working on fixing the problem of the crash of the ACB website, but Joel Isaacs knows that GDUC desires a listserv on ccbnet.org, and it will be, you know, the same kind of thing. It'll be like gduc-l@ccbnet.org. So when the time comes, this is a good reminder for me to touch bases with Joel Isaacs again here at the convention or... Oh, he's not? Okay. I'll email him when I get home, and we'll go forward on the GDUCL.
Excellent. Thank you, Dan.
As far as the website, I did check out the website, and there is a GDUC dash, it was GDU dash something or rather. GDUC-CA or something up online. And it's the old website that Sheila Styra, or that Melita Waters had put up. And it's still up.
GDU-CAL, I think it was.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, and it's still online. And I have emailed... cal.org.
But we should update it?
No, we should take it off.
Trying to get rid of it. So
we've been trying to get rid of it, and I emailed the webmaster, and he never responds. I called the number that I had for him, and he never returns my call. I don't know what entity to call next because it's up illegally.
Yep.
That's a good idea. If you can get anybody to do something about it, she can.
It's true.
Better work.
Thanks for continuing to pursue on that, Dan, because, it would be great if we could have a website, but I think we would like to get rid of all the old stuff and maybe start fresh through the ccbnet.org, maybe, or through ACB somehow. We will figure out whatever we have to do so that we can have something that's newer and current and all that kind of stuff. Was there any other business? Oh, I remember somebody wanting to maybe possibly make a recommendation for the puppy raisers.
What do we do to acknowledge these pups?
We can do all sorts of. We can give them a donation. We can, which we have done. We can always, of course, send them a thank you letter. But
if you have done donations in the past, these people have done such good work for us. I think we should give them a donation. What's the amount, Emily?
That is also varied anywhere from $25
$100.
To $100.
You said there are four clubs involved?
Yeah, the way I have it counted in my head, we have four clubs involved.
Representatives?
Yes. I have asked for each club to make sure that they have signed in at the registration desk and left the name of their club and all of that, and I will then acquire that information from the CCB office, not this week, but probably in a couple of weeks here once they get back into the office and a little rested from the weekend.
Madam President?
Yes.
Just a point of clarification.
Just for Judy's benefit, something that we've also done in the past is include the puppy clubs in our resolution process. We always have a resolution to thank all the volunteers, and we always mention the puppy clubs by name and, you know, all the great work they've done in cleanup and helping everybody around and
state resolution.
Yeah.
One of the auditory resolutions.
Yes, exactly.
Well, I suggest we, if a motion would be appropriate, I think we should send each of these four clubs $50 each and a thank you letter.
Second.
All right. I'll entertain very brief discussion if there is any. All right. Then all those in favor?
Aye.
Anybody against? Abstentions? All right. Then we will make sure we do that.
Question? Make sure that they've all signed in.
Whatever clubs that we actually get information for, then we will make sure that those clubs are sent something.
I'm wondering how much we are being requested to donate in on behalf of the puppy relief area, the guide dog relief area.
We have never actually had anything set up for that. Here at our state conventions, they do that at national, though. And it's always something we could discuss. Certainly, we can. And I think it's a good idea because it is certainly, it's one more cost. You know, the hotel does all of that for us, and I think that would be a good thing that we could do.
Would that be an optional, something to add to the registration, like the free reg?
Yeah.
Thing, like a $5 donation to the...
Okay.
What is the cost of that grass being put out there?
Yeah. I would have to consult the CCB office.
Yeah. I think it's a good idea for us to have the cost of that so that we understand that it's not free.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely very much appreciated that that's been brought up. Because, yeah, the I know at National it's very expensive, so and I really have no idea about the numbers here. Okay, we will definitely pursue that.
Well,
and
I'm gonna make a motion to that effect that we put a as a part of registration for the convention a $5 donation to the guide dog relief.
Okay, and just in case no one heard, the motion is that we adopt a motion to add to a registration for a convention a $5 donation to help to defray the cost of the relieving area. Is there a second?
Second.
All right. Any other brief discussion? Yes, Jerry. We can get him a mic. That would be awesome.
Hi. Thanks. You know, I agree with the spirit of what Christie's has moved, but I don't see how we can possibly enforce it. How
have to be voluntary.
How,
yeah,
I mean, if we do it voluntarily and you know, as an option, mm-hmm. fine. I think that's okay, but I there's no way to reinforce or to enforce that, I think.
Oh, I'm sure we can't enforce it. They don't.
But if a lot of people donate, it's still a nice thing, and those that don't want to, they'll let them anyway.
And it might not even be guide dog users who do it. It might be other people.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
And that actually...
It should be associated, but I think it should just ask for a donation.
No.
Any amount.
No. It's a good idea to suggest.
I think putting a suggested amount, I know for GDUY, they have a suggested amount of $15. And actually, if you do it online, basically you pay $15. But you are welcome to go and make a donation once you're at convention of however much you want to pay. And that'll even be a good idea for an article that I'm even willing to take on, just to give people kind of an idea. So that we can maybe help out with those kinds of expenses. Any other discussion? Then all those in favor?
Aye.
Anybody against? Abstentions? Okay. We will work on that and work on that for doing it in the fall so that we can start helping the CCB. I'm sure they would greatly appreciate that. then is there any other discussion? Yes.
Does the only position ever donate monies for some of the general funds, you know, for the organization?
No.
I am new. I just don't know. Do we ever do that?
Not as long as I've been a member.
No. Chapters do. I don't know if special interest affiliates do.
Yeah. Primarily, I've only heard of chapters doing it, local chapters. Affiliates, yeah, I agree. I have not heard of affiliates that do something towards the general budget.
It's not that it can't be done. It's just...
No, I just asked.
Yeah.
Right.
We love it.
Oh, wow. Okay. It has gotten very late, and so I'm going to ask for a motion to adjourn. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and get this show on the road. For our morning program, we're going to have the topic of dog attacks and how to protect both ourselves and our dogs. And I am going to turn it over to Brian Francis from Guide Dogs for the Blind.
Yay! Brian.
Hi, good morning all. I think there's still some more people going to be coming in the room.
Yeah, there will be.
But let me start just by saying thank you for the invitation to come here this morning. And I always enjoy coming to the Guide Dog Users of California groups. And normally I go to Sacramento, so it's a change to go up south instead of east this time. But enjoy that. So I was asked to talk about dog attacks, and, you know, this is not a new subject. It's a subject that has been talked about for a while. And what I would like to do is not just sit here and talk to you for half an hour about this subject, but rather have a conversation. So what I'm going to do is invite a conversation from anybody in the room. There are people in the room who... Many, of course, who have guide dogs. There are some who do not have guide dogs. Bob Wendler is here from Dogs of the Desert, who, of course, has a lot of experience, and I'm sure can add something to this conversation as well. But perhaps I can start just by kind of giving an overview, as I see it anyway, about this issue of dog attacks. And, you know, everybody immediately thinks about the impact of a guide dog working, being attacked on the street, and that is probably one of the worst case scenarios, but it goes so much deeper than that. We've got some puppy raisers in the room. Puppy raisers are not immune to dog attacks on their puppies. It's happened. and can be very, very serious. Very, very recently, we had quite a serious situation in our Oregon campus where an instructor working a dog, there was a fairly severe dog attack on the dog that the instructor was working right in downtown Oregon. Guide dog users, of course. And the impact, I think, is not just singular, but it's double. There is always a double impact when there is a dog attack. One is on the dog, and one is on the person. And I always say this, but I will say it. I will not pretend to understand the potential impact on a blind or visually impaired person working their guide dog if they undergo a dog attack. As a sighted person, I've undergone a dog attack several years ago. It scared the heck out of me. So I can only imagine what it must be like when you can't see to have a situation like that. And obviously over my years, I've heard many stories of this happening. And it's always extremely traumatic for the person as well as potentially for the dog. The problem... what's the extent of the problem? Survey in 2003 by Guide Dog Users Incorporated determined that about 42% of blind handlers and their dogs had experienced some form of dog attack. About 89% of handlers had encountered interference or unsolicited interaction from a pet dog. And I think it does go beyond what everybody thinks is a dog attack, which is a, you know, the most serious problem. You know, I roll into this whole subject, the interference as well, because to me that can be equally dangerous. If a guide dog is distracted from its work, then there's a safety hazard or a potential safety hazard as far as I'm concerned. And you know, when I say those and I quote those figures, another group comes to my mind, as well as the ones I've mentioned, which are raisers, instructors, guide dog users, and that's potential guide dog users. You know, this is a subject that needs serious consideration from somebody who is considering having a guide dog. And, you know, the potential is there for some people to say, you know what, I'm not willing to take that risk. I'm not going to have a guide dog. And so I think the message about dog attacks has to be accurate. It has to be tempered with what's realistic. And although those figures I just quoted sound, you know, they're pretty significant figures. You know, we have to temper about, okay, what can we do about this problem? So... from a guide dog school's perspective, Guide Dogs for the Blind and other guide dog schools in North America over the last, certainly over the last 5 or 6 years, have taken a pretty active role in trying to improve the situation with dog attacks. And that's been done in conjunction with guide dog user consumer groups such as Guide Dog Users International. We look at the legal protection for guide dog users. There are state and city laws, which are basically civil and penal codes, that protect guide dogs and the handler against molestation and attacks. And, of course, we all know these laws validate the rights of a guide dog handler to equal protection under the law. Regardless of whether their dog is attacked. So that's where really the interference comes in. The problem with the legal protection is that in many, many cases, we found that the legal agencies, which basically are the police and animal control agencies, were very, very ignorant about this issue and how to respond to it. I personally have dealt with several situations where we've been working with one of our graduates who's undergone an attack, and we've counseled them to call the police, and the issue is kind of shrugged off. That's the first response, because what people hear is there's a couple of dogs fighting. they don't understand this is a guide dog. There is a person involved and a person's safety involved as well. So education of law enforcement, animal control, we felt was something that was really needed to be done. And then secondly, certainly at Guide Dogs, we work towards what we called responsible pet ownership. So now, this is a daunting task, so how can you possibly educate every person who has a pet dog? Because ideally that's what we'd like to do, for them to understand that when they're out there either walking their pet dog on a leash or allowing their pet dog to run free, that they have a responsibility. Guide Dogs did that through producing what we called a responsible pet ownership information package, giving that to our graduates when they graduated so that they could take that package home and use it as necessary in their own home area. Because many of our students in training would say, you know, I do have a problem. There is a dog that every time I walk past this house, it runs out of the yard onto the sidewalk. It's not leashed, it's not fenced, and I'm really, really concerned when I get home with my new guide dog about what's going to happen. Is there going to be a dog attack? So with that type of scenario, to provide some information for that pet owner, education first. If you say Guide Dogs has got this mantra, education before litigation, and if we can educate people first, that's the best way. And of course, if they do not respond and they do not keep to the leash laws or whatever is relevant in their home area, then of course litigation is necessary. To get litigation, you have to educate the law enforcement. For the law enforcement, we received a lot of assistance from the San Francisco Police Department, and many of you in this room will know that in San Francisco it's kind of unique in that there is what's called a vicious dog unit. And that vicious dog unit was formed after an incident, it must be 5 years ago now, where a lady was actually killed in her apartment block by two dogs. And this vicious dog unit are terrific. There's a gentleman called Sergeant Herndon and his sidekick called Officer Denny. And they've worked very closely with us and helped us to produce education for police. And that was in the form of what's called the Backup, which is an education program for police where they can receive continuing education credits by just learning. And it is amazing, but probably not surprising, that most police officers did not have a clue about the protection laws for service dogs and guide dogs. And so the Backup program helped an awful lot with that as well. And we continue to work on other programs with that. As far as after an incident has occurred and what success has there been in litigating these people, I would be pleased to hear from anyone in the room. The most common result that I have experienced through our graduates is that if fault was found, then at least any costs that the guide dog user had as a result of the incident, such as any veterinary costs, any loss of work, have been reimbursed by the person who owned the dog. I have not heard myself of anyone actually being fined, because the fines do vary around the country, but as far as fines, and some of you may have more information than me on that. So we talked about impact, and let me just finish on that. The impact I mentioned about on the person, the impact on the dog, and I've just mentioned financial impact. Pretty much everybody in this room knows that it doesn't take long to roll up a bill at the veterinary office, right? So, you know, if a dog receives a physical injury, the veterinary expenses can be significant. You know, if a person is losing their mobility because their guide dog is out of action, that obviously can have serious impact as well. So there's some financial impact. And then, of course, very importantly, if we talk about the dog specifically, there can be a very serious impact on the dog to the point where the dog has to retire as a guide dog because it's unable to maintain a calm and safe demeanor when it's working. And, you know, I'm sure this has happened at all guide dog schools. It certainly has happened at ours. Sometimes the result is that the dog can shrug it off real quick and get back to work and not be disturbed. Sometimes the dog can shrug it off, but it takes quite a long while of diligent work and patience to get the dog's confidence built up again. But sometimes the dog just can't do it. Sometimes the dog is traumatized to a point where the approach of any dog, the dog is unable to maintain its concentration on the work. So there's a significant, significant impact there on the dog itself. All right, I said I wouldn't talk for too long. So what I'd like to do, anybody who has any thoughts, comments, additions to what I've said, I would be really happy to for us to have a discussion.
And maybe Bob wants to weigh in on this as well. Or, you know, when I was in training, the watchword was if you experience an attack, that from a technical standpoint, just let the leash go, let the dog, you know, take care of itself, and never try to interfere with the dog. Is that the same? Is that the same philosophy that you and the other schools have?
Yeah, that's a great question, Jerry, and it's basically what to do when an attack is going on. And perhaps I can say a few words, and then I would be real happy, Bob, if you could add a little bit as well. Each incident is different. I think there are some golden rules. And so there is no one, you know, okay, here's what to do. But here's my advice. And let's assume this is a fairly serious dog attack. So this isn't just a dog interfering. This is a dog, it's physically making contact with the guide dog. Okay. Number one is safety. Okay, and safety of you and your dog. So depending on where you are when the incident happens, there's a big difference between being attacked on a sidewalk, a quiet sidewalk, and being attacked in the middle of a street. Okay, so safety is obviously paramount. But realistically, when this happens, it's typically a shock, and it's difficult to think straight. My best advice is use your voice. And holler as loud as you possibly can. And I would be hollering for help. I wouldn't necessarily be hollering at the dog because the dog doesn't understand the word help or anything else. But to holler is good. There's definitely a do not. If the dogs are physically fighting, and you can tell by, you know, snapping of jaws and what have you, the dogs are physically fighting, you should not put your hands down to try and separate them. Because you will definitely get bit, probably by your own dog, you know, in that heat of the moment type thing. You know, it's just not a good thing to do. Jerry mentioned about letting go of the leash. If the dogs are in a real hard fight and they're probably twisting and pulling and turning and what have you, that is going to create a safety issue for you. And also, holding the leash or the harness handle is potentially going to restrict your dog's ability to protect itself. So yes, there is a good justification in some cases for saying I'm going to let go of the leash and let my dog take care of itself. Now there's risks involved. I mean, I don't have to tell you what they are, but there are obviously risks involved in a situation like that. But you definitely do not want to be holding the harness handle. That will severely restrict your dog's ability to protect itself. So initially I would say end of the leash as long as you can. And if that doesn't work and you have to let the leash go, then in the right situation do so. But yelling for help during the axle incident, get somebody in there to help you as best you can. And, you know, hopefully what you'll attract is if the owner of the offending dog is around, that's obviously the best person to come and try and get their dog off your dog.
Could we pass over to Bob? Hey, everybody. It's Bob Winter, Guide Dogs of the Desert. Nice to be here. Nice to see everybody again. You know, Brian's absolutely right. In years past, it was always just drop the handle, drop the leash, let your dog try to defend himself. And that's absolutely true. I think one thing that people have to make sure of is that just because there's growling going on or a dog is coming up behind you, you want to pay attention to the size of the dog as well. I mean, oftentimes it's the little bitty ones that are the most annoying, and generally they're just trying to herd your dog away, and they're going around there, and obviously you know that you can't hang onto that harness handle because your dog's trying to spin around and chase that little dog away. So before you do let go of everything, and not only are you yelling for help, but you're cheering your dog on, hopefully, if they do get into an outright brawl. But you do need to let your dog protect yourself, and I can't tell you how important it is to follow Brian's advice in not reaching down there with your hands, because the worst dog bite I ever encountered in over 35 years of working with dogs was my own dog, and he was in a brawl when I was in the military. And instead of reaching down and pulling him off the other dog like we had been taught to do, I reached over the front of him, and my dog just about ripped my hand off because they're just biting at whatever they see. So trying to get in there and kick and all that good stuff is not the best option. The best option is to try to prevent it. Oftentimes, you're walking down the street and you'll hear this vicious dog on the other side of a fence. And basically what he's telling you, and he's talking to your dog, and he's saying, go away. And you guys have all noticed that your dog will speed up once it starts going towards a house where there's a dog barking, and then the dog's hitting the fence, rah, 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 and your dog's getting all excited, and you're using hop up, fooey, no, leave it, whatever your word is. And then as you get about halfway past that zone, all of a sudden your dog speeds up again. And basically what you want to do is to encourage your dog to go ahead, because what that dog is saying behind the fence is, I'm doing my job. This is what I do. I bark at other people and dogs when they come by my turf. And once your dog leaves, that dog doesn't always, you know, pose that much of a threat. He thinks he's some sort of a guard dog back there. That's his job. So if you can get your dog past that distraction, oftentimes it's a little easier. Generally, it takes two dogs to tangle. And if you can keep your dog moving, oftentimes you can eliminate that little ritual that dogs go through before they fight. Granted, it does happen. Dogs do unprovoked attack your dogs. They attack people. They attack guide dogs. And the scary thing is how many, you know, we've got these laws. We've got rules. How many of you have got signs on your dogs that say, do not pet? Do they work? Do they work? You know, you've got a law written on your dog's harness handle, and they don't work. So the only thing that we can do organizationally is to continue to educate. You've got to continue to educate. We haven't had too many dog attacks with our school, thankfully. However, the most recent one and the most disturbing one to me as a professional is on the train system down there, a lady that had just got her dog. Her dog had passed away not too long ago, got her a successor dog. 3 weeks after she went home, she boarded the train going to Los Angeles. Her dog was attacked by a police dog. This guy got on, and here you're talking the TSA or whoever they are, the Sheriff's Department. Dog got on, and of course, we need to have these guys. TSA's got to be there. These guys have got to be there. This is a bomb dog. And he let his dog on the train without getting on himself at first. This little dog was laying underneath its seat where it's supposed to be. And out of nowhere, this 95-pound German Shepherd jumped on this poodle and just beat the shit out of her. I'm sorry, but that's what happened. She's all right. We were very, very fortunate in the fact that that this dog not only physically survived, but was able to get over the trauma, and she's working successfully at this time. She was able to bounce back. But the problem is not just the public. How many times you go to an airport now and you find TSA's got dogs? You just have to be aware. And what we have to do is to continue to educate. I guarantee you that sheriff's officer got an education. He's lucky to still be working. But we were able to go and work with that department and to educate all of those officers. They were very, very fortunate. We were fortunate. The lady that has this dog was fortunate, and the dog was very fortunate in this case. Where we're limited as an organization, and I'm sure that Brian will attest to this, because we don't just work with graduates in our immediate home area. We can be there to assist somebody that's close to us, that's local. But because we service people that travel all over the United States and Canada, I've got a dog working in China right now. You talk about having to deal with some things a little off the wall over there. But it's important that we continue to educate. And the best thing that we can do is to educate you, so that when you go home, you can help to educate, and then you can count on us for backup. So, anyhow, that's anything else I can answer for you guys real quick? Yes. All right, here, I'm going to go ahead and pass this out. Thanks anyways, guys.
One trend that scares me that I see with this is that there are a lot of homeless people with dogs. And let's face it, a lot of those guys are half swacked, and so they're not going to show good judgment. I had an incident when I first got home with Ed. It was a real scary deal. I was getting on a San Diego Transit bus, and this dog was growling and snarling and lunging at Ed, and the guy was kind of, and he was obviously three sheets to the wind. You could smell it. And, oh, gee, it's just that he's scared that your dog's going to attack me. It's okay. And, of course, the bus driver did nothing. I was scared shitless. Needless to say, luckily, another passenger kind of stood by at kind of in front of the other dog so I could at least get off the bus at my stop. But I was like, oh, God. And the thing is, I called San Diego Transit the next day and reminded them that they did have an ordinance, and that if a dog, you know, the guy said it was his protection dog or whatever, so they let him on, that if a dog was displaying bad behavior, that they could ask that person to leave, and that maybe they needed to send that memo out to their drivers to remind them. Hint, hint, because this is what happened to me yesterday. And they said they would do that. I don't know if they did or not, but it's still, that's one trend that I see that is particularly scary, and it's one that I think is going to be really hard to control. Any comments?
What you've mentioned about the homeless situation, this is definitely a trend. The incident I mentioned with one of our instructors in Portland, Oregon, was with a homeless person with the dog. And I know for sure, certainly on the West Coast, and absolutely in San Francisco, it is a big trend now for street people to have a dog with them. And for various reasons, and you know, they'll say for protection, and there are many cases where the dog in San Francisco anyway is being accepted as a service animal of some sort. So, you know, they're getting on buses and access the same as you have with your guide dog. But the one thing that we did in Portland, and this is, I think, worth bearing in mind, is if you're having a problem with someone like a street person with a dog, you can bet your bottom dollar a lot of other people are as well. And I strongly advise people not to be frightened to go to their local media. because very often the police are not going to take any action. Again, it's very low priority. It's a dog. You know, we got much more important things to do. But if you go to the local media and you tell a story, you know what? I walk down this street every day with my guide dog, and I am being harassed. You know, whether you've been attacked or not, but I am being harassed. And what happened in Portland, the media picked up the story, not only about guide dogs, but about service dogs. And that rolled into homeless people, and it rolled into, are these homeless people's dogs service dogs, or what are they? But there was so much news about it in newspapers and on the TV. The situation improved dramatically. So I would always encourage, don't be afraid to call your local newspaper, your local television, tell them a story. And that's how you guys can help with the education.
Yes, I had a question regarding this type of thing. Well, for one thing, I agree the media, and that goes in any situation, whether it's a dog attack or anything like that. The other thing is, somebody told me one time that if you have a dog when you're on the street, at least packed away somewhere with you, if in case something happens with the dog, it might not be a bad idea to have a cane, you know, just where you can get to it if you need it, if the dog somehow gets hurt. Or something happens. And the other thing I wanted to ask is, what about such things as hydrophobia, or I think they call it hydrophobia, if that dog who bites or attacks is rabid, has rabies, isn't that a consideration too? Do you go to the vet? Do you make sure that that's taken care of as well?
I can answer first, and then if Bob maybe has some more information. The rabies question, first of all, I sure hope that every guide dog is inoculated against rabies, so the chances of rabies is not very high. But the first part of your question is, I think, very interesting. You mentioned potentially carrying a cane. That's a really good idea. Some guide dog users carry a cane all the time in case there is a situation where either they don't want to work their dog or they want to supplement the dog's work for whatever reason. But for people who live in areas where they frequently encounter loose dogs, they start to think about protecting themselves. And so maybe we should talk about that just a little bit. And the types of protection that I've heard of, I definitely know of one of our graduates who walks down the street with her pocket full of rocks. Okay, now what she does is, and it seems to work for her, is so she is in one of these areas where there are a lot of stray dogs. They tend to be vocal. So what she does is when she hears one, she just kind of lobs a rock in the general direction. Now, don't ask me how many cars she's hit and Lord knows what. But anyway, that's her method, you know. I've heard, and I definitely don't like this one, I've heard people with some type of spray. Okay, like you pepper spray or whatever. You know, the problem with that is it's very close quarters, and if you nail the attacking dog, you're probably going to nail your own dog as well. So that's a very tricky one as far as I'm concerned anyway. You know, the cane is probably the other most frequently one. You know, if a dog's going to attack my dog, I'm going to get out my cane and try and whack it. And, you know, it's possible. I think shouting and screaming and being as verbal as you can is still the number one result to prevent an attack. In other words, if you hear a dog coming and it's, you know, the feet are coming down the road and they're, you know, no, what are you doing? No. You know, you be as firm and loud as you can. You've got a fair chance of stopping that dog, you know. Now, that won't work once there's a dog fight going on very often, but you can very often prevent a dog with your voice.
Just real quick, it's a great idea on the cane, and I actually take all of my students to the Braille Institute as one of our outings during the training, and we purchase what's called an ID cane. Most of you know what those ID canes look like. They're just the smaller ones, small version, and they can fit into a fanny pack or whatever. And you know, my feeling, and I'm sure Brian will attest to this years and years and years ago, you went to a guide dog school, the cane went in the corner, and you don't need that anymore. Well, that's not reality. You know, it's not reality. It's like selling you a car without a spare tire. and your dog goes out there and gets a flat tire because he steps on a piece of glass or something, and you're left to fend for yourself. So I send everybody home with one of those ID canes. You know, I just think that it's a great backup tool. When you talk about working with the press, you know, oftentimes there's something else going on and they can't get out there. So, you know, like Brian said, it's low priority, obviously, to the police departments. They feel that they've got more important things to do, which is unfortunate. But with the news crews, if you can get somebody out there and have them experience what you're experiencing, it often has a much greater impact. And if you can find somebody out there, if you can befriend one of the reporters out there, take them out there and put them in blindfold and ask them to experience it from your perspective. Ask them to maybe not necessarily work a dog, but maybe just to try to walk down the street where that dog is harassing you. And putting that blindfold on somebody that's with the media has a huge impact, you guys. Because they're not living the life, but they can experience it in a way that you do. So I'm very, very adamant about asking people to do that, because I've had a lot of success with it. You put that blindfold on somebody, and they go, oh, my. You know, there's some reality to it. So here you go, man.
Hi, this is Joan. Is this microphone working? I guess it is. Okay. Thank you. I like your idea of yelling for help, because I live in Berkeley, and I've fortunately not had a guide dog attack when I had a dog, but I've had an experience with street people that if there's some kind of confrontation, they either speak illogically or they don't speak. So you're not going to get their name or their dog's name or, you know, exchange information or whatever, whatever. I like the idea of just yelling for help, and hopefully there'll be somebody out there. I'm interested in the ID cane. I've not heard of those, although I've been in the blindness field a lot, and I've been blind all my life. I wonder if you mean a telescopic one that's just a small cane, or you mean a short cane. And then I had one other thought here. Maybe the schools should issue a blindfold to be used in selective incidences. You know, not slap it on everybody to experience blindness, but I kind of like that idea that maybe a policeman has to walk 20 feet blindfolded. Anyway, that's it.
Hi, I'm Linda Fonseca. I experience people, you know, as well as dogs too. You know, that they let their, I notice they let their dog come up and smell my dog, and I tell the people I am working. You know, my dog is working, and he cannot be friendly at the time. And they see the sign on him, "Do not disturb me." Ignore me. I'm a working guide, but I notice I have to educate people and tell them that he is working and that he can't be on a social call at that time. And some people get it, some don't. So, am I doing the right thing? You know, I'm telling the people, you know. But, you know, some that don't get it, I guess I just had to repeat myself to them and Brian to tell them again and again. He's working, even though I tell him one time. Sometimes I wonder if they can read. Thank you.
Just a thought here, too. Sometimes what's important to make people understand is even when you're sitting down, even if your dog's lying down asleep, if they're in their harness, it's best for someone to ask before they pet your dog, because your dog is still technically on duty, even if they're laying down looking like they, you know, they're going to be down for the count for a while. They're still in harness and on duty. So that's what it's important to make people understand. I mean, I know this isn't about an ID cane or a dog attack, but people do tend to come up to me on the street sometimes when I'm walking. Oh, they're just smelling each other. It's all right. Well, but it's interfered with my guide work. You know, so people do need to be able to be educated constantly to try to get that fact.
I wonder if maybe using the little dog whistles that they can hear something, or yeah, my daughter was talking about developing some kind of push button thing that is on the harness or on the leash that you, that, or evidently they have something that you can just push a button and it emits a sound. And I'm wondering if maybe something like that can be looked into.
Interesting. I've always found that a Glock 9mm works.
Is this Sherry Gabrielson? And out of, okay, Bruce is my fifth dog. He is the only, he's been distracted by other dogs, but he's the only dog I've have had that has not been attacked. The first and most ugly one was with my first dog, Wish, Golden Retriever. I was living in a children's apartment complex in Concord. This other family snuck in their Doberman, and they were having it attack trained, and it lunged and got Wish out in the parking lot area right near the mailboxes. I don't recommend doing this to anyone because GDB did tell me drop the leash and start screaming. I had a gut level instinct to turn her physically totally around. Her hindquarters were right next to my left leg. I turned her so her head was next to my left leg. And immediately after I turned her, that dog lunged and caught her in the hindquarters where it, otherwise it would have caught her in the neck. She did have to go to the vet. It took her a while. She recovered. She was able to work after that. But yes, it was quite traumatic to say the least, and I've always been a very strong advocate of for people to use their leashes. With Bruce, I recently in Berkeley had an incident. Another dog came up, started sniffing, and I was just about to say, well, hey, you know, keep your dog on a leash, and the lady says, well, he is on a leash, and I thought, there's a difference between holding the leash. What happened? Did you forget that piece? So, oh, my grandson gave me a good name for Bruce's harness. One day he goes, Grandma, don't forget his holder.
There was a question just a little while ago about maybe some sort of noise-making device. I don't have any information on that. You know, my one concern about anything like that is if it's going to do harm to the attacking dog, it's potentially going to do harm to the guide dog as well. I still believe that the human voice, you know, if you are in a stressed, panic type situation, you are likely to put a lot of emphasis into your voice, and that sharp, sudden, loud voice is, you know, very, very effective. You know, anything, as I say, any physical thing or sound or spray that's going to affect the other dog is likely going to affect your dog as well. So there is some danger there. And then the last story was just a really good example about this question of, do I drop the leash? Do I not drop the leash? You know, and there is, like I said right at the beginning, there is no one answer to that. It's a situational thing, and you have to make a call in that split second. Vivian, do you have a question? Let me pass this.
Okay, I had a guide dog that was attacked, and of course, I lost it. I was very afraid. I did a lot of yelling, like about my dog. I was scared for my dog, and then all of a sudden there was a whole bunch of other people that were into action really quick. One person was about to get into a fight with the owner where the dog just ran out from the house, and then somebody else was yelling at somebody else, and it was just like, oh my God, I don't care about that. I just want to know about my dog. But what I learned from that experience is to always have a cane, because you feel totally helpless You know, and you don't know if your dog is going to respond to you because, you know, he might be panicked, and we may not see exactly what's going on with the dog. So the other thing is, I recommend everybody always have a cell phone, because if we're going through any neighborhood, and let's say people are working or whatever, it's just another form of protection for us. Now, I also was walking through, I walk really early in the morning, sometime 6, 7, and this dog followed us for a mile. And as soon as, the dog would get so close, I used my voice and eye contact, and that was what kept the dog at bay. So the voice is really important. And then I went home and called the 911 and also the animal, animal control. And I said, I explained that this dog followed. Do you know the dog stayed out in front of the apartment for an hour? And so that's, I called because I knew we were going to have to go back out again. And so I just wanted to share that it really does work to not just only scream, but try your best, you know, while our dog's going forward doing their job, looking back at the dog and finding where you think they may, where the eye contact might be with the voice, because dogs are very sensitive to movement and eye contact and that type of thing.
All right, yeah, of course, that's a great point about the cell phone. I bet there's not many people in this room who do not have a cell phone. So, yeah, and definitely 911. Don't think twice. Is this really a 911 call? It absolutely is a 911 call, okay? And as far as I'm concerned, it's fine for you to say to the emergency operator, I am a guide dog user. My dog and myself are being attacked. Okay. Again, it's not no foul to hit home the importance of this. This is a guide dog. I am a guide dog user. We are a team. So if my dog's being attacked, I'm being attacked. There's one more question on this.
My question is when you go to different hotels, it happened to me about a year ago. I went to a motel for a different Alliance convention, and I was charged $20 for a pet fee. Is there any way that I can contact someone at Guide Dogs to help me with this? And I'm going to another convention in 2 weeks, and they said they would charge me a pet tax unless I didn't sign up for their rewards card.
Okay, I'm all fired up here. That's absolutely illegal. They cannot charge you any kind of a cleaning tax or pet tax for any kind of any guide or service dog. It's absolutely illegal. Apartment complexes can't do that. There's no public entity that can charge you. Now, if you're in a place, and obviously the dog, who knows? Every dog's capable of whatever, but, you know, if your dog actually does some damage in a hotel room, like tears up the sofa, sure, they can charge you. They have every right to charge you then, but they cannot charge you any kind of entrance fee, extra fee for that dog. And I'm not sure who you would address. I would immediately approach the hotel manager. And if it's a private hotel, you know, like a motel or whatever, or if it's a chain, certainly contact their headquarters, their national headquarters, and tell them the situation. And that chances are that manager or that front desk person will very likely lose their job.
Can you pass it back again? It's Bill Gillespie. I did contact the district governor. I contacted the hotel. And only way I got my money back is by threatening them to sue them.
It spraying again. Well, whatever works, you know. But, I mean, I think someone said just now, go as high as you can. Don't talk to the desk clerk. Ask for at least the manager. If it's a chain, ask for the manager of the region or the country, whatever you want. And again, educate as best you can. As far as guide dog schools, I think that probably most guide dog schools are similar to Guide Dogs for the Blind in that we definitely want to support graduates in any of these kind of issues. And, you know, we have staff who part of their job is to keep updated with, you know, access laws, ADA, dog attacks, and all the and transport and all this kind of thing. So it is a good idea to call your guide dog school. In a potential litigation, it is not a good idea, at least in my opinion, for the guide dog school to try and litigate on your behalf. What we do from our school for sure is we provide you with the tools that you may need to take the action yourself, because it's obviously much more powerful coming from an injured party than it is from a third party. Well, Madam Chairman, I am not seeing any more questions around the room, so let me just say thank you all so much for participating, and thank you for this conversation this morning. Not a great subject, but thank you so much, guys.
Yeah, thank you very much, Brian, and also to you, Bob, and excellent discussion from everyone. And at lunchtime, if you are coming to the lunch, please bring your ticket that you got when you purchased your ticket for lunch. And that starts at noon, so we will adjourn until noon. Hi to everybody. Good afternoon. And welcome to the Guide Dog Users of California lunch. I am Mary Beth Randall, president of GDUC. I would like to do is just sort of introduce ourselves so that everybody can hear who's here. And also then we'll just kind of let everybody eat for a little bit after we introduce ourselves. So again, I'm Mary Beth Randall. And I have my yellow lab Tennyson from GDB, and he's 4 years old. And I'm going to go to my left.
I'm Paula Barton. I have a wheelchair guy, Darwin, but he's not here with me. So he's from GDB. I'm sorry about that.
Hello, I'm Michael Moore. I am here representing Guiding Eyes for the Blind at the table downstairs, and I am here with my dog that I just got in January, Orion.
This is Maya Scott with golden, now turning silver retriever, named Tessa.
This is Susan Schulter with Zeus, Black Labrador Retriever, who will be 4 years old in June, and he's from GDB.
Good afternoon. Melissa Hudson with guide dog Anya. She's 8 years old. She's my first guide, female Black Labrador Retriever from Guide Dogs for the Blind.
Yay!
So, good morning, everyone. I'm Eric Holm. I'm a board member of the State Board for Guide Dogs for the Blind. I'm here with my guide, Ford. He's a yellow Labrador from GDB, and I'd like to thank you all for having me today.
Hi, I'm Maria Wong. I don't have a guide dog, and I'm from Santa Rosa.
Okay, and I'm Beth Berenson, and I don't have a guide dog either, but I'm here because all of you have a guide dog, and I'm working the microphone, too.
Hello, this is Linda Johnson, and I'm with my guide dog, Renata, and she's a golden retriever who is about 5 and a half now. Third dog from GDB.
Hi,
Hi, I'm Leslie Tom, and I have right now a yellow lab, Harry, and he's from GDB, and he's almost 10 years old. So I'm going for my interview on Monday to get a new guide.
Hi, I'm Adele Moeller, and I'm here with my guide dog, Aloha. She's a Golden Retriever Yellow Lab Cross. She's 5 years old. She says mahalo, yes. Yeah. And also today I'm here with my sister-in-law, Paula. She wanted to see what it was all about. It's her first time here at the luncheon, and we're having a great time.
And I'm Mike Moeller, and I'm with Adele. She allowed me to come along with her in Aloha.
Bill Gillespie, I have Garrett, a yellow Labrador from GDB. He's 7 and a half, and having a great time with him. And something else, I'm also an Alliance member, and we just had elections in our Santa Rosa Host Club, and I was just elected 3 weeks ago to be one of the directors on the board.
Hi, I'm Brian Connors. I'm here with Smokey from GDB San Rafael. He's a black lab.
Hi, Brian Francis. I'm representing Guide Dogs for the Blind, and good to see everybody again. I need a little help controlling these other people on the table with me. They're out of control up here. Huh?
Hello, this is Sylvia Munoz with Nina, little yellow lab, third dog from GDB.
And I'm Dan Kaiser. I have a chocolate lab named Reese's, like the peanut butter cup, from the Seeing Eye. And, you know, Seeing Eye dogs don't bark. They don't bark. They back.
I knew that was coming. I'm Ann Kaiser, and I'm here with I'm the immediate past president of GDUC. I'm here with Daytona. She's my fourth guide, black lab, from GDB San Rafael campus, and she's 7 and a half years old.
Hello, I'm Jerry Arakawa with Yellow Lab Tova, 5 years old, from the Boring campus of Guide Dogs for the Blind.
Hi, I'm Alice McGrath, and I'm here with Cato. He is my yellow lab, and he turned 7 this month in April.
Hi, I'm Vivian Younger, and I'm with Hawaii from GDB, and she's dog number 5. So we have Aloha and Hawaii.
It's a hard act to follow. I'm Dave Hoffman from the Silicon Valley chapter. I'm looking forward to trading in my cane for a guide dog, but as a puppy, I was raised in Canada.
I'm Peter Crockwell. I don't have a guide, but I'm here for all of you who have guides. And
okay. Next.
Good afternoon. This is Mark with Oswald. With Wendy from GDA. She is 4. She's a black lab. And she loves kissing everybody.
I'm Gina with a yellow lab named Hesper, who is from GDB. She will be 9 in May.
Hi, I'm Sally McGuire, and I'm here with my dog, whom I call Blossom, from GDB, and she is 8 and a half years old.
Hi, I'm Joan Groves, and I retired Sabrina last year. She's living with a couple in San Rafael, and I think she's totally leading the good retired life, possibly better than mine. Anyway, I've made friends with my cane for a while and have gone up and down on the dog issue and what I was going to do. But I am scheduled for a retrain class in May, and I'm looking forward to it, and I'm looking forward to introducing my dog in the next time I come to convention. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Daryl Wilkerson.
Hi, I'm Preston Moses. I'm here with my imaginary yellow lab, Mahi Mahi. I am just kidding. I don't have a dog and don't plan to get one, but I'm just being supportive of everybody who wants to have one.
I'm Glenda Castle, San Diego chapter, and I'm here with my white cane, Charlie.
With the Charlie. Yeah. How many years?
Yeah. Mom, Linda Fonseca again. I'm sure a lot of you people heard my voice a lot this morning. Anyway, I want to reiterate that I'm happy to be here this weekend. Thursday was my fourth year anniversary from Guide Dog for the Blind with my second dog, Norman. And today, the honorary Norman, it's his birthday today. He's 6 years old today.
Wow, there you go.
Okay. I'm Sherry Gabrielson. Yes, I finally did it. I reinstated my maiden name, so I'm no longer Annis. It feels wonderful. It's a great life. I'm here with Bruce. He's my fifth guide dog. He just turned six February 29th, which we celebrate his birthday on March 1st, in honor of one of his trainers, that her birthday was March 1st. So that's how I made the choice whether it was going to be February 28th or March 1st. And he's just an absolutely exceptional dog. Oh, I'm sorry. He's from GDA.
I'm Christy Crespin. I'm here with my daughter Paula and also my brand new Labradoodle caramel color Caroline from Guide Dogs of the Desert. And she's 2.5. And she's number 8.
Hi, guys. It's Bob Windler. Today I'm here representing, thank you, Dan. I'm here representing Guide Dogs of the Desert. All you guys with your Hawaii named dogs, don't forget to give them their poo-poos. But I'm here representing Guide Dogs of the Desert, and I'm here with a whole heck of a lot of friends from all these schools.
I'm Lindsay Hastings. I'm here with my black lab, Valencia. She's 3.5 from GDB, and she's my first dog.
I'm Lee Morton, the editor of Forward, and I have my male black lab. We just had our two-year anniversary of meeting as a team on April 13th, which means April 12th was kind of a sad day because that's when I retired Elaine. But Ed, I think, was one of them who was talking. He does earn his title as Mr. Ed, the talking dog. And he's just turned 4 on March 10th. And now it's my birthday. And Ed's father, Norbert, who is also Norman's brother. So that's why we're all having birthdays today. So it's weird. I just met Ed's uncle up here. So anyway, we're having fun.
You're going to have a birthday party.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Lee.
You're welcome.
All right. Well, welcome to everybody. And for the cane users that have names for their cane, my husband, Tom, who was also here at convention, is a cane user. And we affectionately call his cane Kwai Chang Cane. And so welcome to everybody. We're all glad that you're here. We will start with the guide dog schools. We'll let the schools kind of talk about whatever's going on with them. And I am going to let Mike from Guiding Eyes go first, if you would be so willing. He's not here. He'll come back, I'm sure. Well, then, Bob or Brian, we'll let you guys arm wrestle over who gets to go first. That would be our entertainment. There we go.
We're up and running? All right. Yeah, this is always fun for me to be able to come up, and Chrissy's given me a rough time, and Adele's given me a rough time, thinking that the only reason I came up here was because there's a motorcycle show later this afternoon. They're right. No, it's always great to get here, and I wasn't 100% sure I was going to be able to make it, because our staff is pretty small out there at Guide Dogs of the Desert, but I'm glad I was able to make it and come out here and see old friends and just to kind of share some things. You know, I've been doing this for a long time. I've got a lot of met a lot of done a lot of wonderful people over the last 33 years. That I've spent training guide dogs, and as I started getting on here 5 or 6 years ago, I started thinking to myself, you know, Windler, you can't do this forever. You got to start thinking about retirement here before too long. So I'm thinking, okay, 5, 6, 7, 8, and now it's all of a sudden grown to 9 more years that I'm going to be doing this. But I kind of started saying to myself, you know, all the things that you've been able to accomplish and all the wonderful people that you've met and all the wonderful stories that you'll be able to tell your apprentices and your kids and grandkids, you need to make a bucket list for yourself. And things that you'd like to accomplish before you do retire. And one of those things on my bucket list was to, through work, visit every state in the United States. Hawaii and Alaska are still waiting, and I'll get there before I retire. But I visited every other state in this great country of ours through work, and been able to share some of the things that I've learned and been able to learn and be educated by the people that that I have trained in the past or that I've decided to work with. One of the other things that I said that I would like to do is, and being a veteran to, I was a dog handler in Vietnam, was to be able to work with an all veterans class. And last year in March, I graduated 6 veterans with guide dogs, so I was able to. I could have retired after that, and my mission would have been fulfilled, as far as I'm concerned, because it was something that I truly wanted to do in my heart, and it was something that was very, very heartwarming for me, and it's something that I've been able to convince the powers that be at Guide Dogs of the Desert that we'd like to do on a yearly basis. So I've checked that off my list, and it's something that I'm going to be able to continue to do. The other thing that I kind of looked at and said, what else would you like to do? What would you like to do on a personal basis with an organization? And that was to be able to help in the process of designing not only a program, but to be able to design a facility that is going to be built on the dreams of what I've learned from you guys and as graduates, because you are my teachers. So anytime I get out, I start asking people, what would you like in a guide dog school? Not just the training, not just those things. Those are things that are individual. And we can do that. All the schools have their own individual traits and techniques, and it all works. Whatever works for you, works for you. That anybody that really knows me, I don't care what color your harness is. That doesn't make any difference to me. I work for people that choose to use guide dogs as a form of mobility. But I listen to people, and they say, what? And I say, what would you like to have on a facility? And I visited a lot of the different facilities. I had the pleasure of working at the San Rafael campus for 15 years. I've been up to the Oregon campus, and I've seen some of the things that people like up there, and I ask people what their likes and dislikes are. So when Guide Dogs of the Desert decided a year and a half ago that it was going to move its facility, I was given a blank palette to be able to build. I've already worked on building the program that I wanted to build, but I've been given a blank palette as far as the campus goes. And Guide Dogs of the Desert has recently purchased a 5-acre existing ranch and about 40 miles from Palm Springs. We're a little bit closer to San Diego. We're a little bit closer to Temecula, the wine country out there. We're going to be getting off of that hot, windy rock that we exist on now. There's 1,000 windmills out there where our school is located. Those windmills are there for a reason. It really blows out there in the desert sometimes. So we are going to be moving our campus, and some of the things that I've been able to see as far as the architectural drawings are going to be are just heartwarming to me, because they listened to what I said I heard from you. And I've seen the architectural designs for our new dormitory setting, and I'm not going to call it a dormitory because we're going to have 8 separate casitas for our clients. Everybody's going to have their own private apartment. We'll work on the jacuzzi. The trainers get the jacuzzi first. But we're going to have 8 separate casitas that are located out on the property. Each one will have its own fenced-in yard so that you'll be able to get out and do some private playtime with your dogs. I'm working with a very dear friend of mine who's also a horticulturist, and she's helping us to design pathways that travel throughout the entire perimeter of the property is fenced right now. This was horse property. So, you know, we've got the security of having 5 acres of fenced-in property. We're going to be putting pathways throughout the property, and we're going to be using different textures on these pathways so that a person's going to be able to tell where they are on the property with the tactile feeling underneath feet. So the area that's going to go up to the kennel area is going to have aggregate gravel. Going out to the rose garden area is going to maybe have bark or something like that. So we're going to have different textures. We're going to have scent gardens throughout the facility, so you'll be able to tell by using the sense of smell. We're going to have 12 different water features on the property, and some of our graduates are getting together right now, and they're naming some of the fountains after their dogs. So they're working together. We're going to have a victory garden, but everybody's going to be having their own private rooms, and not just private rooms. We're going to have your own private apartment. Everybody's going to be coming over to the main house for mealtime, where we'll be holding our lectures and so forth. It's a short walk across onto an existing ranch house where our offices, some of our offices will be held. And I can kind of imagine myself standing outside with one of those big triangle things, you know, that they used to ring outside the... Come and get it. And everybody will be able to come over. But the facility itself is just fantastic. I've taken a lot of graduates and clients have gone out to the property, and just the feeling that a person gets when they're out there. The comments that I'm getting is, gosh, I feel like I'm at a resort. And that's kind of what my dream is to be able to have somebody come out and feel like, although they're away from home, we know how difficult that can be, but that you're at some sort of a resort, and I think that that's going to make things a lot easier, a lot more comfortable for people. A couple other things that this move is going to provide us is, number one, getting us out of the 110, 115, 120 degree heat of Palm Springs, which limits our work time right now as far as classes go. It's just too hot. Not only is it too hot for you guys to have to go through class in, but it's too hot to ask the dogs to work in an environment like that. The area we're going to be moving to is about 10 or 15 degrees cooler on a regular basis. It's nowhere near as windy. It's a little bit closer to San Diego. It's real close to the Temecula area. If anybody's ever been out to Temecula, great little town to work your dogs in. So there's a lot of advantages. We're going to stay in touch with Palm Springs. That's where we're started. We have some financial backing there. Some of our administration staff is going to stay in the Palm Springs area. We have a little depot in downtown Palm Springs right now. It's kind of a lounge where our students work out of. So we're going to continue to work in Palm Springs. There's certainly some advantages to being able to work there. But I'm really excited about some of the things that that this is going to be able to help me do, to help me better serve you guys. As far as the program itself, I continue to work with Labradors is our mainstay, just like most of the programs throughout the world. We are going to continue with our quest at rebuilding a German Shepherd stock. And I actually have three German Shepherds that are somewhere in the program right now. So we're working on it. Same thing with the Golden Retrievers. I actually have 9 little Golden Retriever puppies on the ground right now. So we're hoping for them. We've had a lot of success with our Goldadors, and we're going to continue with that. We're going to continue, at least in the immediate future, with our Labradoodles. And we're trying to strengthen the standard poodle breeding stock as well. I have a 2-year waiting list for standard poodles, and it's going to just get bigger. I do have a couple of baby poodles on the ground, and they sure are cute. They sure are cute. So we're going to continue with those breeds of dogs. One of the downfalls about having a small organization like Guide Dogs of the Desert is the waiting list is a little bit longer. I do have 60 to 65 applications on the books right now, and in spite of losing 35% of our staff due to economics in the last year, we increased our production. I was able to train 19 students last year, so, and that made me feel real good about where the program is going, and what that tells me is that our breeding program and our training program is working, because people are going out there and staying out there, and they're being successful. So that's where I'm planning on continuing to go. Currently, I have 4 licensed instructors on staff. I'm going to be hiring another licensed instructor to do some contract work for us. It's somebody that I've worked with in the past, and she'll be able to be doing some work and providing some in-home trainings for us. I'm hoping next year after we move to hire 2 more apprentices on our program, so we'll be able to boost our production up just a little bit. My goal in the next 3 years is to train 24 to 28 students on a yearly basis, and that's going to be a combination of in-home training at our new facility and our in-residence training at our new facility and providing a few in-homes as we possibly can. So 3 or 4 years, I'll be able to check off that last check on my bucket list. Okay? Any questions out there? Yeah, Linda.
Yeah, how many, like you said, you're increasing your German Shepherd stock.
Right.
How many German Shepherd are you putting out?
That's all up to Mother Nature. And you know, there's something, and I'm sure Brian will back me up on this. I don't know what we did, and I'm not saying we as in Guide Dog Schools. I don't know what we in this country did to the German Shepherd breed or to the poodle breed, but we screwed something up. And that's a crying shame, because I've certainly put out an awful lot of nice ones over the years. And all the schools. All the schools, all the breeders, professional breeders, are having difficulty in being able to get the right temperaments, the right physical traits that we need as guide dogs. You know, and they're different. The dogs that wear these harnesses are Olympic gold medal caliber animals. They're and the world's not getting any easier for them to work in. It's getting harder. So we need more from them. So we're hoping. We'll keep our fingers crossed.
Do you have, like, various sizes of them? Like something that they want a small
pepper
or something like
large pepper, like this? Yeah, I've got a female that's in a puppy home right now that's probably only going to be about 22, 23 inches at the shoulders. But Bullet and Bow are big boys. Bullet and Bow are big boys. They're probably going to run 27 inches and 90 pounds. So, okay, I got a couple more questions. Sherry?
Yeah, from what I understand from GDA, that the Golden Retriever stock has also been, you know, it hasn't been good quality. Is there any indication that the Goldens are going to come back to be the high
We're working on it, and I know some of the other schools are. You know, years ago, everybody kind of kept their own private little breeding stock over here, and nobody wanted to share things. Well, that's not the way things are anymore. You know, I think through different organizations, the guide dog schools have finally put their heads together and said, you know what, there's plenty of blind people to go around. You know, there's and don't worry about there, this is not a competition. For crying out loud, we're providing a service to people that decide that they want to come and get our service for whatever reason. You guys do your homework. You go on the internet. You talk to other people. You make your own decisions. So why can't we work together as guide dog schools and share things? I've got two Australian Shepherd puppies in my program right now. And you talk about cute. I brought one home from Southeastern, and I brought it home on the plane. It looked like a little key fob, you know. I just walking around with it on the plane. Talk about a chick magnet. Holy cow. So we are continuing on. Yeah, Daryl?
Yes.
Do you have a question?
I have a question with the Labradoodles. Uh-huh. I've heard with the Labradoodles, the temperaments, I've heard from the general public that they're can be mean. Is that true, or is that a myth?
Any dog can be mean. Any dog can be mean. We're certainly looking for the proper temperaments in any breed of dog that we're using. For guide dogs, and they're different. It doesn't mean that I think that there's this little half brain in there that's saying I'm a poodle. There's another side over here that's saying you're a Labrador. I'm a poodle. I'm a Labrador. I think they figure it out that they're a dog, and you know, that's the job of the trainers, to be able to look into that individual dog. I think one of the most difficult things for me as a trainer was, when I started working with poodles and labradoodles, was learning how to read their body language. You know, all these years I've been able to learn how to read dogs' body language, even from a distance as an instructor. You're walking behind somebody at a half a block away, dog gets close to the curb, you see the tail start to wag, you know that there's communication going on between the instructor, or the student, and the dog. With the poodles, they just go down there and I don't know what he's thinking. With their ear carriage, you can't really tell. Their tail carriage, depending on if they have that little foo-foo thing on their butt or whatever. You know, it was real difficult to try to read the dog and find out what they were thinking. And once I got on one, and actually when I say get on one, I mean pick up the harness handle and start working them, and then I can go, whoa, he gets it. He really gets it. This is pretty cool. And so it's a constant learning thing. You know, all dogs are individuals. But to answer your question, Daryl, you know, that's something that we're working on with all of our dogs, is trying to get the proper temperament out of those dogs so that we can move forward and teach them what they need to learn.
What about the grooming?
That's a great question. As far as the grooming goes, the Labradoodles don't need to be cut as often as the poodles do. As a rule, they're all individuals. The poodles do have to go see the groomer, anywhere from 6 to 8 weeks at a time, and that's an expense that could be very difficult for people to come up with. And absolutely, they need to go. They have hair, and the thing about the poodle or the goldens and shepherds and other things is they actually have fur, and poodles actually have hair and it grows, okay, just like ours does. So they have to go and get actually cut. Yes, absolutely.
I'm going to kind of cut it short.
All right. I'm sorry. I get long with it. So.
We're going to give certainly some very good questions, and I think the poodles are a very interesting breed. Definitely. But anyway, appreciate it, Bob. And Mike, you're back.
Yes.
So why don't I let you go next?
All right.
Because I was going to let you go first. That's okay.
Hi, I'm Michael Moore, and I'm here from Guiding Eyes for the Blind in Yorktown Heights, New York. And I wanted to say that I was just there in January getting my new dog, Orion, and the school has moved on to an even newer course that I found quite exciting. We're doing a lot. The training methods are still the training methods. We're still using German Shepherds, Golden Retrievers, and Labradors primarily. We did put out a whole bunch of dogs from the Seeing Eye. I guess they had done a little overbreeding and needed some help getting some dogs out, so they went down. And I know in my class in January, there was a ginormous Golden Retriever who went out. Beautiful dog. And so we also have a new, I don't know if any of you know, but Jose, who had been in charge of the maintenance and the grounds and the food service and all of that, he retired after 1.5 years. And we have a new chef who is on board now, who has made the place kind of into a little bit of a gourmet stop. And so the food is actually really quite wonderful. And it's nice to be greeted by really good, high-quality food when you're absolutely exhausted and need a good meal. So that was quite wonderful. And again, the renovations are all complete. We have, you know, the single rooms and all of that, and it's working out very well. The stock is good. We're, as all the schools are, we're building and exchanging breeding stock and working to keep the guide dog quality in America up really, really high. And I think that the only way that we can do that is as a group of schools together, and to really not keep this, you know, I went to this school, it's the best school, and the animosity and the and all of that. You know, there's a school out there for everybody. Everybody can fit into one of the many schools that are in this country. And I would hope that we would, as blind people, be informed and look on the internet and check them out and talk to people and really find the best school for you when it's time, or when you're talking to people who want to get a dog. You know, because not every school is right for every person, but there is one that's out there for everybody. Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks, Michael. Appreciate it. And I'll just last let Brian go, and then we'll be almost done.
All right. Thank you very much. Hi again, everybody. I tell you what, I really enjoyed that lunch. It was really nice. Yeah, that chicken dish was great. Yeah. Oh, thank you so much for that. Okay, anybody who has ever had any contact at all with Guide Dogs for the Blind will certainly have learned one name, and the name is Sue Sullivan. Yeah? Okay, so after 44 years at Guide Dogs for the Blind, Sue is retiring this year. And you may, some of you may have got a notification from the Alumni Association, but, you know, Sue Sullivan is a very, very special person, and has had a huge impact and touched everybody who's ever come through Guide Dogs for the Blind. So she will be leaving at the end of June this year, and it's my daunting task to try and replace her, and I can tell you that's pretty much impossible, but hopefully we will be able to continue. We will continue the great service that Sue's provided in the admissions department. If any of the graduates from Guide Dogs here would like to, what Teresa Duncan and our Alumni Association is offering is for anybody, if they have any sort of kind words or comments about Sue, we're going to compile like a book for her, you know, from graduates and staff. And If you'd like to submit anything, you can do that by contacting Teresa Duncan, either at the toll-free guide dog number or email. And you know at Guide Dogs, all our emails are the same. It's the first letter of your Christian name and then your last name. So in Teresa's case, it's tduncan@guidedogs.com. But if you do that, it needs to be quite short. So have a little thought and then come up with something that you think is relevant, because we are expecting a lot of people want to do this. So, we wish Sue, obviously, retirement, a really great retirement, and she's going to be very, very much missed at Guide Dogs. Okay, let me talk about training real quick. For the past year or two, Guide Dogs for the Blind has been changing our training program for dogs and for students. Without going into any great detail, everybody's heard about the introduction of food in guide dog training and the introduction of clicker in guide dog training. And those tools have made a significant change in a positive way as to how a dog can learn to become a guide dog. That doesn't mean you forget all of the traditional dog training techniques, and the skills of the instructors we have are as important today as they have ever been, if not more important. As Bob said, our world doesn't get any easier to navigate, does it? So, you know, it's just another tool which has proved to be a positive tool. On the student training side, we're now offering a wider selection of training. We're offering 2 and 3 week classes, standard. And, of course, like most schools, the number of requests for in-home training continues to increase. And it's something that I think any school has to look at, and how are we going to accommodate those needs. And it's not just somebody would like in-home training. In many, many cases, it's the difference between having a guide dog or not. As far as their commitments at home with family or work or whatever, they just cannot get away. We've certainly found that offering the 2 and 3 week classes alone, we've had very positive feedback from people who, you know, they can get away from work for 2 weeks, but to come for 4 weeks would have been very, very difficult. So we're continuing to develop the class program there as well. And then, as far as facilities are concerned, now, nothing is certain, but Guide Dogs, I can tell you, is moving ahead with planning for development of the San Rafael campus. And this would be a complete restructure of the dormitory and the administration wing at Guide Dogs. We've been working with architects. We're working with the city of San Rafael now. And when I say we, that really is our CEO, Nancy Gardner, and our board of directors. And although no definite decision has been made, and that's why you probably haven't heard anything about this up until now, from my aspect, it looks pretty positive that we will be moving ahead with a redevelopment of the campus. And that would be a brand new dormitory, which would include, of course, single rooms, which everybody offers now, and the ability for double rooms as well. And a brand new administration wing. The buildings in the San Rafael campus, for those of you who haven't been there, have been there a long while. And, you know, so when we look at those buildings and we look at potential refurbishment, well, the refurbishment would be so intense, it's as cheap to knock them down and build new ones. What we will do as part of this plan is keep many of the important aspects of the San Rafael campus. So, for instance, there is a redwood grove there, and that's going to stay. There are some very mature and exotic plants and trees around the campus, and all those will be staying as well. And for those of you who know the campus, basically what the plan is right now is where the current dormitory is would actually become the administration. That's where the new administration building would be built. And on the other side of the campus, we border a cemetery. And that is where the new dormitory will be built. Because it tends to be... Yeah. It tends to be pretty quiet on that side. Yeah. But there's method behind our madness. Yeah, I know. You can move one way or the other. Either if you're successful, you go out the front door. If you're not successful, you go out the back door. No, but there is some method to the madness. The one thing that we know is going to happen in Marin is by 2014 there is going to be the introduction of a light rail system from the north of Sonoma County through Sonoma and Marin and down to the Larkspur Ferry Terminal. And that line, which exists right now, it's an existing line, just hadn't been used for years, runs right by the campus, by where the dormitory is now. And so the plan to put the dormitory on the other side of the campus is purely for noise. The train itself won't make much noise. It'll be electric. But we know that there are certain parts of the track where the train has to blow its horn. And lo and behold, right by where the dormitory is now is where the trains are going to be blowing their horns. So we want to try and keep away from that. So that's something that hopefully you will be hearing about and is confirmed in the not too distant future. And then very lastly, I mentioned Teresa Duncan earlier on, and many of you know Teresa Duncan heads up our Alumni Association, which has a board of directors of graduates, volunteers. And one of the developing aspects of the Alumni Association has been developing alumni chapters, as we call them, around the country where we have groups of graduates. And I'm pleased to say that there are now 13 chapters across the U.S. and Canada of Guide Dog alumni. And these groups they meet for just to get together. There's some social aspect. I can't tell you over the years how many graduates have come to me and said, who else lives close to me with a dog from our school, you know, and they may or may not know. So the alumni chapters are a great way of doing that. Where there's puppy raising groups, the puppy raisers are often part of it as well. Other agencies, in Seattle, for instance, we have good relations with some agencies, and they meet at the Seattle Lighthouse, and puppy raisers meet at the Seattle Lighthouse. So it's a very great community building process as well. So we're very happy with how the Alumni Association is going. And then just lastly, although she's not in the room with us now, just in case you haven't said hi to her yet, there is another Guide Dog staff member here. It's Janine Kitihata, who works with Ariel Gilbert in the outreach department. And Janine is out manning our booth. So if you haven't said hi to her, swing by the Guide Dog booth and say hi. And I'll finish just by saying, once again, thank you so much for the invitation. I always look forward to it, and it's great to see everybody again. Thank you. I got a question by the look of it.
Okay,
let me give you the microphone.
Yes.
Okay. Can I add something? This is Linda Johnson, and I went to the alumni chapter meeting that Teresa held in January at the Lighthouse. Okay, and so myself and Seth Webster and Debbie, we have been talking over the phone, and we are organizing the alumni for Northern California here, the Bay Area alumni chapter. So you're going to be getting an email, and we're looking to doing a meeting in May. So hopefully you all will come. And so we're wanting all your input, what you'd like to see happen in a chapter, and do what Brian was talking about, socializing, sharing experiences, and all that great stuff. So look for this email.
Thank you. All right. We're going to quickly get wrapped up here so that everyone can get off to general session. I didn't want to let lunch go by without one of the California Guide Dog Board members just being able allowed to introduce himself.
Hi again. I'm Eric Holm. And, Ford is my first guide dog, and he has been absolutely the best thing that has ever happened to me. And he is actually the reason I got it as heavily involved as I've gotten. And I really appreciate the opportunity to be here today, listen to all the stories, our common concerns, our solutions to, various difficulties that we have. And the whole guide dog experience just moves me. It is my great passion. And on the board, I beg you to participate, to talk to us, to tell us good things and bad things, you know, to attend the meetings either in person or telephonically. Our next meeting is going to be on April 23rd. You can go to our website, which is www.guidedogboard.ca.gov. The agendas, everything is open records, open to the public, and please participate so we can make this just better and better. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Eric, and we're very appreciative that you came today. Thank you very much, everybody. It's been a pleasure, and we'll see everybody in the fall.
Perfect.